It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, our Veterans Day episode 11-11-2018, the 100th anniversary of Armistice in World War I, 11-11-1918. A thank you to all of our veterans for your service. We won't forget. We appreciate it. Our show today features Lisa Schmeiser, editor at IT Pro Today, Wesley Faulkner, who is developer relations advocate at IBM, and Micah Sargent of iMore and Chihuahua.coffee. We'll talk about the new Apple hardware and what it all means, Samsung's folding display, why people don't trust Mark Zuckerberg, but do trust Oprah, and a whole lot more. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 692, recorded Sunday, November 11th, 2018, Ravioli for the Recount. This Week in Tech is brought to you by ExpressVPN. Protect your online activity today. For an extra 3 months free with a one-year package, go to expressvpn.com/TWiT. And by Robinhood, an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and crypto commission-free. Sign up at twit2.robinhood.com for a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help you build your portfolio. And by Ring. Ring's alarm security kit is a smarter way to protect your entire home. Go to ring.com/twit to learn how you can get whole home security for only $10 a month. And by FreshBooks, the ridiculously easy-to-use cloud accounting software that helps small business owners thrive. Try it free for 30 days at freshbooks.com/twit. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news with the best tech journalists in the business. From Windows IT Pro, ladies and gentlemen, I give you, actually, sorry, IT Pro Today. Let's get the name right, Lisa. Come on. Lisa Schmeiser, editor of IT Pro Today. Hello, Lisa.
Hi, it's nice to be back. Thank you for having me.
Welcome. In town. But everybody else is on Skype. Wesley Faulkner is all the way in Austin, Texas, where he works in developer relations. He's developer relations avocado at IBM. Mm-hmm. It's good to see you.
Hey, good to be here. Thanks
for having
Wesley.
Me. And Micah's in Seattle. No?
I wish.
Where are Micah Sargent?
I'm in Missouri.
That's right. You're in Missouri. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Chihuahua.coffee. Yes. Micah Sargent. Hello, Micah.
Hello, Leo. Hello, everyone. Good to
Welcome
be back.
Welcome to the show. This was a big week for Apple. Look, the new iMac is here. The new iMac is here. Oh, it's so pretty. It looks just like the... Oh, it is the old iMac. This one's a really old one.
Yeah.
Yeah. We used to use these by the dozen. We've got several still left. The new iMac. This is so much like the old iMac, though. But it's same size, form factor. The on-off switch is in the same place because there are people who use them in rack mounts. Mm-hmm. In server farms, and they need the button to be the same spot as
now,
before.
That Mac Mini is bigger than the other Mac Mini, so why are we still calling it Mini? That's like Mac Medium.
This was the old Mac Mini, but it's thinner.
Ah, I see. It's thinner.
It's like they squished it down.
It's like a Samoa after you've been keeping it in your back pocket for a couple of days.
There's a marshmallow that they've toasted and squished down a little bit.
I think these are beautiful. They announced new MacBook Airs, which look a lot like the old MacBook Airs. Actually, I kind of like it for that reason. Both this and the Mac Mini, the MacBook Air and the Mac Mini, I feel like it's old home week. I feel good about that. I don't want things to change too much.
You know, you said it looks good, the new Mac, or looks the same, but if you're looking at it, it's not going to feel the same because it's got that new Retina display.
Oh, finally, boy, does it finally, look better. Finally. Yeah, finally.
It's about time. Like the MacBook Air used to be the computer that I would say, if someone comes up to me and says, I want to get an Apple laptop, and all they do, you know, is email and normal everyday stuff. I didn't have a computer to recommend to them for a while. I was like, "Kid, do you think you could get by with an iPad?" But now that the MacBook Air is back, I'm happy that that's there, so I can say this is the one you should get.
Kind of is the Mac for the rest of us, I think. And I was concerned because they're using a Y processor, a slower processor. But after using it for a few days now, I got it. I guess mine on a Thursday. I feel it's fast enough.
Does the price not bother you though?
Oh. Okay, let's say this right up front. If money is a concern, you shouldn't be buying any Apple product at all. Right? In fact, I mentioned this on Mac Break Weekly.
The entry-level Air was somewhat obtainable.
Yeah, you can get an iPad now at $329. So, yeah. Okay, we'll leave that out. But any of the new stuff, it's really for rich folks.
And it's for people who are willing to pay a design premium.
I don't feel great about that. Yeah. I feel like it used to be that was their tagline, the computer for the rest of us. Mm. It's now the computer for the rest of us if you've got bank.
Yeah, but when it was the computer for the rest of us, the idea that they were selling then was this is a computer where you don't have to know programming to make sense of the interface and the applications.
It was never cheap. In fact, I went to Macy's because I couldn't afford the first iMac. Charged it in my Macy's card. It was $2,500. It was never cheap.
No, but the idea was computer for the rest of us was drawing a very bright line between people who did computer-related things for a living versus people who were going to use a computer to do non-computing things, either recreationally or for a living. But now I would argue that they charge the prices because they can.
They get away with it.
And we've also had nearly 20 years of teaching people that design is a premium worth paying for. When it comes to consumer goods, people pay money to think that what they're using has been designed well and thoughtfully and beautifully.
You're using the old MacBook Air.
Yeah, I'm cheap. I don't upgrade until I have to.
Still designed well, though, right?
No. You know, it's funny. I likened the new MacBook Air to mom's home cooking.
Yeah.
You could get a more gourmet dinner out.
Yeah.
But this is what you. Since 2008.
I'm a reporter. I don't need a lot of processing power. I don't edit video. I don't edit a lot of files with a lot of data. And I'm not a gamer. So I don't need a machine that's souped up. I could probably comfortably use this until it gets to the point where Apple releases an operating system that's not compatible.
Right.
I should also add, I'm still using my
iPhone. Oh, my God. It hurts my eyes just to see it.
What number is that?
It's a 5S.
It's the smallest thing I've ever seen.
I'm still using.
How do you live?
Because I use it as a phone. That's it. I mean,
that's the problem. I haven't used my iPhone.
No,
as a phone.
I also use this when I'm reporting because I can use it
to record.
I can use it for recording and things like that. But, you know,
you wouldn't want to take notes on that.
Oh, I do. I can do that.
And Leo's beside himself.
And I have a recorder, too. But, I mean, look, this is how I've
said. The horror.
I mean.
At least you're safe from any helium releases.
By the way, that does not work. We tried to kill my iPhone. I was very brave. I put an iPhone and Samsung Note 9 in a bag of helium. And they refused to die, damn it.
But, yeah, this is how I've set up my home screen is because I want
to. Oh, that's so pretty. You don't have any icon. By the way, this thing is hot. It's working hard to display that. You don't have any icons on there.
No.
You just have a notepad, reminders, messages. You don't even have a phone icon on there.
No, because I don't call people much. But the point is I cleared off my screen to remind me to spend less time on my
phone. This is actually kind of nice.
Wow.
And then
I kind of like that.
It's just got a river running through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's Bernie Falls. I went hiking there this past summer.
Pretty.
So I have it there to remind me to get outdoors, too.
Is that the same price as the Palm phone?
I had an early Palm phone.
I want one of these. This is the new hotness.
Your apps are able to fit in that one folder stack then?
Yeah.
Wow.
They do.
That's incredible.
Well, I also this is where you all just like keel over in shock. It's only a 16 megabyte phone.
Okay. I got to go. I got to get out of here.
Just put that next to this phone.
Of course.
Just put that next to this phone.
It's been great because it forces me to actually just pare down the apps and keep the ones I'm going to use regularly.
This is the new iPhone XS Max.
Oh, my gosh. It's so precious. Oh, it's adorable.
It's so tiny.
I know.
It looks like the remote control for my phone.
The remote control.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
But, you know, as a reporter, one of the things.
But you didn't pay $1,250 for that either.
But, you know, one of the nice things about actually using lagging edge tech on a regular basis, too.
But you can touch with the people, the little people.
Well, I wouldn't say little people, but I think what it does is it helps keep computing in context outside of my job bucket, if that makes sense.
No, it's smart.
Yeah.
It's smart. And I wish I could do that, but I can't. I have to be in touch with the rich early adopters.
Those are your people.
Those are my people.
Who will speak for the rich early adopters?
Yeah, somebody has to speak for them. So the truth is, the thing that was most interesting, and by the way, this is not new. This was announced 2 weeks ago, but they finally came this week. Mm-hmm. And so we were able to play with them. And the thing that really, I think, is most interesting is Apple is released a Mac Mini and a MacBook Air that are very much kind of just a evolutionary upgrade on the existing mm-hmm. products, kind of giving people what they wanted, but without changing the design substantially. And then they gave us the computer from the future, which is the iPad Pro. And this thing, this thing is not this year's computer. It's probably not even next year's computer. This feels like the computer from 2029.
Yeah.
It's really futuristic, and partly because of the chip in here. Mm-hmm. And I think this is where you really look at Apple, what Apple's doing with the A12, in this case, the A12X for the iPad. And Intel's way behind. 7-nanometer, 8-core GPU, 4 high power, 4 low power. Although, if necessary, Apple said all 8 of them can kick in, which means this thing has huge overhead. It's got 7 GPU chips, 7 GPU cores in here. It has its own neural processing chip. This is a great, by the way, conversation on Ars Technica. It turns out Anand, now we know what Anand is doing. Anand from Anandtech is now at Apple and gave the demonstration and the explanation of what's going on with this A12-10. Or A12X.
Also, don't forget about the T2. The T2.
And there's another chip in there. There's a T2 security chip, which does a whole lot more than that. It does sound processing. It runs the storage, so you don't have to put a disk storage card on there. So in all the new Macs, plus the iPads, the T2 it gives you super fast disk performance. It's really interesting what Apple's doing, and that is also an Apple designed chip. Yeah. But a number of people have written, and I have to concur. I started with Neil Patel at The Verge, mm-hmm. but I've seen many others write this. I really liked who was it that wrote? I think a kind of a critique of the iPad Pro is the software. It isn't anywhere near sophisticated enough for this processor, for this mm-hmm. chip. You have this amazing screen. You have this new user interface. You have so much hotness in here. And I'm being absolutely sincere. This thing is such a mind-blowing piece of hardware. And it's running on essentially a blown-up iPhone operating system.
Yeah, and they talk about how the iOS is sort of it. Coddles its users. It is hugging the orangutans, if you will, in that it's just making like it's meant to be simple and easy to use. And so, literally, I was about to ask you, as you're talking about, you know, all these awesome things that the iPad does, what is the most powerful thing that you've done on that device since you've gotten it?
Well, it's great for watching Netflix.
Right, exactly. It's disappointing.
It is disappointing. Craig Maud on his blog, craigmaud.com. Says the new iPad Pro is a computer from the future with software from yesterday. And I couldn't agree more. And I think that the more and more people are playing with it, they're realizing that. Jason Snell told us yesterday that there was a rumor that there were many more features left out of iOS 12 designed to make the iPad more of a real computer. And that will come maybe in iOS 13. Mm. But and I should point out, if there's things you do, like photo editing, that work on this. This is an amazing device. There's a great article here. I gotta find all of these articles. Iceland iPad Pro. There's a great article by Austin Mann, austinmann.com, talking about taking the iPad Pro to Iceland and using it exclusively for editing, and saying, yes, my pictures look different edited on the iPad Pro, but this is a much more effective artistic expression for me, using the pencil, the iPad Pro, and Lightroom CC to edit. He says it's a powerhouse workflow that is ultra portable.
I can't help but feel like they're kind of catching up with the Surface mindshare at this point too, because Surface has had pencils for a while. I mean, not that Apple has too, but Microsoft has been very aggressive with their evangelizing to let you see how you can use the Surface both for office contexts or for coding or for more creative work. And they've done a great job of positioning it as a machine that will help you get things done and is also much more versatile than a laptop.
That's an interesting point. I'm sitting in front of a Surface Studio with a pen.
Yeah.
And I do use that pen, and it is a giant screen, and, and it's almost
this is the next
iPad should be a Surface, like a Surface Studio. But I feel like that's an interesting point, because there it is, a desktop operating system on iPad-like hardware.
Yeah. Well, Microsoft's been moving towards that, though, with a lot of their universal Windows applications.
Yeah.
They've been trying very hard to build a user experience where you can move from your desktop computer to your laptop to your Surface tablet and back again.
So maybe that's my mistake. Yeah. Maybe this isn't the computer of the future. I should have just bought a Surface Pro instead of an iPad.
It depends on the rest of the ecosystem.
Microsoft is always ahead of the curve, too far ahead. They're ahead of their time. Yeah. They've had tablets forever, and it took a while and took someone else to be able to bring it mainstream.
Bill Gates was a big believer in tablet 20 years ago.
Yeah. So I think the pen, if it comes out on Microsoft, then wait 5 years and then come out with it again and be new.
Yeah.
The pencil. The Apple Pencil, though, is better than the Microsoft pen.
Right, because they learn from the mistakes.
Oh, okay.
They are the pioneers that get the arrows in the back.
I see.
Everyone learns about what's the future. And if you look at what's that project, the folding Microsoft thing that never came out.
I can't remember.
That was supposed to come out. Still might come out.
It was called Courier, and then it was called Andromeda.
Yeah.
And now it's called the Samsung.
Yeah.
Folding phone.
They are learning a lot from their labs, and I think that they are releasing things when they think that it's good enough for them, and not thinking about smart people or not so smart people, or figure out a way to transition between those.
I had left Microsoft out. I probably shouldn't have.
Well, one of the things
I don't want to use Windows. I have the Surface Go. I have a Surface Studio, as you can see. But it's running Windows, which to me doesn't feel as elegant.
Well, one of the things I've noticed about Microsoft is they eat their own dog food. Everything that they release to the public, they use internally first. And on the one hand, it's great because they've got a use pool in place. But on the other hand, I think it may create an effect sometimes where, because it works for them, there may not be the awareness that the rest of the world hasn't had the same learning curve at the same speed.
Right.
For example, they have been using workplace metrics on their Office software now for a couple of years.
Right.
It's working great for them. It's helped them figure out time management and move them towards this new idea they're pushing out, which is that they want to eliminate multitasking and introduce people to the idea of just flow. You know?
See, that's part of the problem I have with the iPad is that basically, no matter what you're doing, and I know, don't write me, I know there's multitasking, but basically you're doing one thing at a time.
Yeah. But the point is Microsoft has been...
And it's hard to...
They've been overhauling their own culture and how they work internally.
Yeah.
They've now baked it into their products.
You don't
They're
get
going
the
to
feeling.
Release it to the wild, but I don't... Like Wesley said, it's a little bit ahead of its time. I'm not sure it's going to be something that people are like, oh, thank goodness, I now have terrifying metrics that tell me exactly how much time I spend emailing somebody and how many hours a week I spend in meetings, and what am I supposed to do with this? You know, we're not quite there yet, but people who have been eating the dog food for a couple of years, they're there.
Yeah, it says Microsoft left the psychology out of technology. So they can figure out how to do things that work good for them, but they do not factor in the rest of the population.
No.
That's a marketing problem more than anything else?
No. It's a smart people and a smart culture it's a reinforcing feedback loop, if that makes sense.
Well, is it the problem that Silicon Valley's always had, which is engineers design for engineers?
Oh, no, they've got a great UI program. I think, again, the thing is there's a big difference between designing something that works for a culture internally versus one that's going to work for a larger market. To use a different metaphor, in the 90s, you could always tell when a website was really poorly designed, when it reflected the internal structure of a company, rather than the customer-facing things people wanted to do on a website. And so when you're looking at how products get developed, sometimes it doesn't hurt to ask, does this product just reflect the company culture that they have, or does this actually reflect an awareness of who their customers are and what their customers want?
It's ironic because Microsoft seems to be leaving desktop computing behind.
Oh, they're very clear about that. They're very clear that we're in a post. I mean,
it's all about the cloud now.
Remember, Satya Nadella's first thing was mobile first, cloud first, and then they moved to the idea of digital transformation, which is the notion that computing is all about the digital information that you either create or you manipulate or you extract value from. And now what they're moving into is, now they're trying to push you to a post-app environment too, where the idea is not so much you open this app, and this app to do your job, but you identify your task flow, and then the apps seamlessly integrate with each other so that you don't have to switch between them.
Yeah,
I don't know if I trust that kind of thing. It sounds cool in theory, but I still have... Like the file system on iOS, I think, is an example of this whole idea that like you have a task that you want to complete. And so it doesn't matter where your files are, and it doesn't matter where this is or what app you're using. You just use tags to make sure everything's organized how you want it. I don't like that. I and maybe that's the difference between, you know, still being in that area where we've got holdovers from the way that we've done computing for so long, whereas maybe, you know, like my youngest sibling, where he's not thinking so much in terms of apps and thinking in terms of this idea where it's like workflows that you follow. It might make more sense to him, but I don't know. I'm stuck in my ways. That sounds terrifying to me.
Micah, you're not even 30.
No, but as long as I've been using computers, this is like...
You're digital native, right? You grew up, you've always had the internet, you've always had computers.
I've had dial up.
Dial up. I guess that doesn't count. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I started on
your
dial
brother.
Up.
Your younger brother's digital native, though.
Oh yeah, he's and that's what I'm talking about. Like the difference between where I still use computers like everybody else does versus he using computers. Like he would perhaps fit better into that, you know, new way of things that you're talking about.
Well, that's
there.
What I often wonder is that maybe. I'm trying to shoehorn an iPad experience into my previous experience of desktop computing, and that's and to some degree, by the way, Microsoft also does that.
Yeah.
And maybe there is a new paradigm of computing that does make sense.
Well,
can I roll out a theory?
Yes, roll
can
out
I roll
a theory.
Out, here's the theory. So you hit the nail on the head when you said that it's the hardware is way ahead of its time before the OS, because my theory is that the iPad Pro is the development platform for the next era of computing, and they need something more powerful for where they're going rather than something that fits the needs of today.
It feels like that. It feels like...
And if you look at what they're doing with their processors, the T2 chip, they're continuously getting closer and closer to controlling everything that's needed for something radical to happen. And if you look at, and people didn't touch on this, when they changed their reporting structure for their financials, saying they will not break down individual units, they probably are going to release something that's very radical, their future, that won't sell very well, but will be disguised. In terms of how well or how not well it's doing, and so they don't have to break into it.
That now I got to wrap my mind around this one. Actually, Apple did that. There's a history of doing that. The Macintosh did not sell well. The Lisa really didn't sell well. Sorry, Lisa.
I'm used to it.
but they clearly reinvented computing. And in fact, Apple may be in that exact same stage they were at when they had the conference that said Apple II forever. We'll never abandon the Apple II. Meanwhile, here's a Macintosh. Forget the Apple II.
Yeah.
And they did shortly after kill the Apple II. Maybe they're in that transition phase. One thing we probably do know is that this is almost the end of the line for Intel and Apple, right? They've got this. It's pretty clear when you look at what's going on in this A12X Bionic that they've leapfrogged Intel dramatically. And because they're designing chips for their own operating systems and their own environments, they can, instead of making a general purpose chip, they can make a chip that is tuned to work as well as possible with the existing hardware and operating system.
And if you look at the T2, it's an accelerator. When you break it down, it's a cryptography accelerator, it's an encoder accelerator. So anything that wherever they're Bionic chip falls short, they can just accelerate into the T2 and keep iterating there separately and still be able to stay ahead of the curve. If a new technology comes out, they'll just wrap it into the T2 without breaking their development of their Bionic processor.
They did say that the iPad Pro is faster than 92% of all laptops sold this year.
Wow.
I mean, that's remarkable.
You've got to think. iOS 13 has to have, I mean, because we saw that when, well, even was like a point release where we saw a lot of fun stuff happen for iPad where the multitasking improved and all that kind of thing. And so maybe, I don't know if it'll be a point release, but in the next iteration of iOS completely, we'll see another one of those things happen where our iPad gets, you know, a whole lot more features that, like Jason Snell was talking about. Because, yeah, right now it does feel like you've got this incredibly powerful vehicle that you can, I don't know, like go underwater and fly through the sky. But right now those features like aren't available to you. You can't turn those on. So you get to the water and it stops you. You don't get to go underwater. And it seems like when you can look at this thing and go, well, it's faster than all of these computers and it can do this and it can do that. But then you go to the App Store and you look for something that uses even a third of that processing power, it's hard to find anything that does that. Even folks that have been doing, you know, video editing and audio editing and things like that on the iPad, they've been able to do that just fine with the devices that are out there, right? Or, you know, with the devices that have been available so far. So now we've got this incredible machine and it doesn't feel like we've given it anything to stretch its legs
right.
with.
It feels like a super fast Netflix machine. So Wesley, what... Do you have a thought about what this new product that Apple might be thinking about will look like?
Well, if you – sorry I harp on this so much, but if you look at the T2 chip, this I think it's a big key that no one is spending too much time on. It is the hybridization of their processors and Intel's processors, if you think about it. So more and more functions in their desktops will be moved over to the T2 or their laptops. To the point where the processor does just the bare minimum, and then they'll switch over and replace Intel's processor with the combination of the T2 and the Bionic chips. And so the reason why I was saying that
that makes sense. That's a natural transition. But it sounded like you were also saying that maybe there's also a device in here that is neither desktop, laptop or iPad. There's some sort of new kind of device they're envisioning.
So the iPad itself has a USB-C port.
Right.
And
which
it's
we've been playing with in all sorts of ways. We were able to get video out of it. We're able to, if it's got data, it can charge. It can charge in both directions. It can import camera right now, but it can't talk to an external hard drive yet. But that's a driver issue. Can't talk about
that's
keyboard and mouse
issue,
yet.
Right?
That's a driver issue. Apple's chosen not to support that, but could easily.
And so what I think that the iPad Pro's development platform is because they are plugging in either external accelerators or external devices like the keyboard. But think of a keyboard within – they have a keyboard with a trackpad or some other interface that can be expandable, which means you can retrofit your old iPad to be whatever their new computing paradigm is. I don't know, that's augmented reality with a camera or whatever. And that will come up they'll come out with some sort of desktop replacement or laptop replacement that'll have all that built in and then say, hey, all of the – everything with a USB-C port, now you can be upgraded into whatever this new thing is.
You know, Steven Sinofsky, who was kicked out at Microsoft, he was in charge of Windows 8, and which was kind of a mess. But he has, but at the same time, I think he's a smart. Yeah, he's a smart guy. I think he was given an impossible task, which was also this kind of difficult transition from desktop to tablet computing. They did a weird hybrid that nobody wanted. Yeah. And I think they've come out of it pretty well, as we were just talking about. I think Windows 10 on a Surface Pro
they had to skip Windows 9.
Yeah. But Sinofsky says it's a mistake for people to focus on replacing laptops with iPads. He also thinks that it's the next generation that these iPads are aimed at, a generation that's never going to want to connect external storage to a device that lives in the cloud.
This is the thing is how we compute is changing,
right?
Period. So
historically difficult, though, for a company to throw a dart ahead 5 years and say that's where we want to be.
Well, I mean, IBM made typewriters at one point. They've made computers. Right. Companies can and will deal with successive layers of technology as people change what they're doing in the workplace. It seems like what we're doing now is we're trying to, like you say, throw a dart for 5 years and say, the people who have grown up in a swiping tactile world, what are they going to ask for when they hit the workplace? I mean, you can be like, in the future, everyone has Iron Man gloves. We don't know.
I guess it's hard for me.
In 5 years, don't forget, in 5 years, we all have to change computing paradigms anyway, because we will be moving towards a unified memory paradigm. So there's no RAM.
Wait a minute. Slow down, buddy. What the hell are you talking about?
Yeah, what's that?
I know you work at IBM, but for those of us who don't, would you explain that?
I understood Iron Man gloves, but I don't know what this means.
You mean there's not going to be a distinction between storage and RAM? Is that what you're saying?
Right. Mm-hmm. Means that large storage will get fast and
so
faster
fast.
And cheap. Yeah. And so that's basically the same. Yeah. So you won't look at a phone or a laptop and say, how much RAM does it have and how much storage does it have? It'll be just one number where your operating system and your storage for your data have to live together. Yeah. And so that takes a whole nother way of approaching an operating system, memory management and storage. And we're getting closer and closer and closer. And so everything has to change when that happens.
Is this the Opteron, the 3D RAM that?
No. That's inefficient, but it's also not affordable. But
that's like Rambus. It's the Rambus of our generation, basically.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So I'm not saying when it's going to happen, but 5 years sounds reasonable. Yeah. And it's if you look at there's research where IBM was able to change the magnetism of a single atom. Where it takes like 100,000 atoms for regular storage, you can see how you can really dramatically increase the density of memory. And once you can make things smaller, you can also make them cheaper
and faster.
Yeah.
Okay,
well,
boy.
Cheaper
Wesley,
always changes the nature of computing too, because when you think about when cell phones were expensive,
right?
Very few people had them and used them. But when Apple and other companies persuaded carriers to underwrite the cost of cell phones, and they became mobile smartphones. They became cheaper for a while.
Yeah, they were ubiquitous. They became ubiquitous,
and that changed computing because that's what nudged us into a mobile-first model. Is people like, my phone is a hard drive, and it's also something that connects me to the internet. This is basically a tiny computer.
Is Apple smart enough to be able to predict the future and skate to where the puck is going, as it were?
So, I have a slightly heretical perspective in that I don't think Apple is a computing company so much as I think they're a consumer company whose focus is computing products. I don't think Apple
or a fashion company. Almost.
Yeah, I don't think Apple should be considered in the same category as Microsoft or IBM or a company.
But if you look
that
at
offers
the A12X,
technical services and goods,
the A12X is innovative technology, right? The T2 is innovative technology. Mm-hmm. Technology,
but they don't sell people on the technology. They sell people on the experience, or they sell people on the consumer goods.
That's just good marketing.
Yeah, but that's
make great technology, then sell them on the experience. That's what Steve Jobs always did.
But again, you know, we can sit here and talk processor speed, and storage and things like that. I would bet that
Apple knows real people don't care.
Exactly. Yes. Most people who walk into an Apple store are not here because they're like, I really crave a faster processor. What they want is they're like, I want something that will let me, you know, post to the gram, or I want something that will let me take notes in a meeting, and I can rely on it being a good user experience that seamlessly interlocks with all of the other things in my hardware ecosystem.
But doesn't the one inform the other? I mean, doesn't higher, faster, cheaper technology then make it possible to do what normal people want to do better? No? They're not related?
I feel like we have to kind of break it out where user experience makes or breaks something. For example, Apple didn't set out to kill the mid-market digital camera market, but it did because it was easier to pull out your phone and take a photo than it was to carry on a phone and a $600 digital camera.
It's only a geek who says this iPad has all this power but doesn't live up to it, because most people just go, well, it either works for me or not. They're not thinking about
exactly. Yeah.
The T2 chip or the A12X.
Oh, give me that T2 chip, won't you?
Do you have anything with a T2 in it?
But I think that what we're in the larger tech industry as a whole, though, what we're looking at companies that are effectively, you can put them in a bucket and be like, oh, they all trade on NASDAQ. But Apple is in no way the same type of company as a Microsoft, as a Google, as an IBM, or oh, God, I'm trying to think.
Does that give them an advantage?
It depends on who you're targeting. I mean, Apple's not going to be able to go into the enterprise and take it over, like, right now.
No, but they are
they
the most...
could if they wanted to.
They're the most valuable company in the world right now.
Right now, yeah.
Boy, this was this segment was food for thought. You've completely rocked my world.
I'm still stuck on the Iron Man gloves, honestly.
Yeah. No, this is just, but what's interesting, and again, I have the benefit of being around short people an awful lot, but their primary method for interfacing with a computer is swiping.
Yeah.
It's very tactile. It's very physical. Yeah. And I can't help but think you have a generation that's raised on Minecraft, which is all about building things in 3D. And they're used to swiping. They're used to tactile. Like, they have to have keyboarding classes to type. But it kind of makes no sense to teach them a technology that was developed for an earlier technological leap. Like, to them, why would you not just make your body part of the user interface and move? You know, what could you do in computing, or how could you use computing in ways that you're not using it now if you have 360 degrees of movement around you and you can physically rearrange things?
So we're going to have a Minority Report style UI. Who knows?
Who knows? Who knows? I mean, I've done HoloLens demonstrations where
And I just did the Magic Leap.
I had to build like a factory floor and design it using that. And then I had to also fix a pipe while having a customer service person walk me through it on the upper right-hand thing. And what really...
Oh, that's cool.
And what blew my mind about it was, again, it's a much more immersive experience because it is very physical and you're using your voice, you're using your body to gesture and things like that. And I was thinking, why wouldn't this be the next stage for mainstream computing? You're always going to have accessibility issues you have to get around. There's no way around. There's no way to avoid that. Like, there are going to be people who simply can't use their bodies. But I think that we're going to move away from the keyboard as your primary interface for data.
So you're gonna see a buff guy walking down the street, and you're like, oh, he must have a desk job.
Yes, exactly.
That's funny.
Look at the size of his forefinger. My God.
Yes, all those triceps are super buff because he's like writing formulas in Excel. There we go. All right, let's do the startup that does that.
Yeah.
Do you think tech companies are, so I'm going to ask the question again, are smart and know what's going to happen, or are they just... they're looking for solutions to problems that don't exist. They're throwing spaghetti on the wall and seeing what sticks.
In the case of Apple, they are never first.
Yeah.
They don't care. They don't need to be first.
They don't need to be first. They just look what works and just like, okay, we'll do that 10 times better.
Let's wrap it in white plastic and sell it to people.
Nevertheless, I keep coming back to the T2 and the A12X. They're doing stuff.
We've had accelerators, we've had processors. Yeah. They're just bringing it in house, and they're like, "Well, these are our goals. This is not for all these other companies. It just is for our use. So we want to put money here. Right. We're going to reduce this part. We're going to cut this part out. We're going to speed this up. And price is no object because we don't have to then sell it and then make margins on it. We have margins by not having to resell it at a loss at a sale or get this much volumes because we know our customer base because." We are our own customers. They can focus on what they need to focus on.
And then there's Samsung with the foldable phone. And I look at that and I wonder, is this something everybody's going to have in the future? Or is this something Samsung thinks might be something everybody wants?
With our aging population, it's a big screen. If you're 70, 80.
Big screen in your pocket.
Which our population is moving towards. Yeah. You're going to want a big screen.
It's funny because at the event, Samsung turned out the lights.
Yeah.
Didn't they wrap it in something too?
Yeah, they wrapped it in a case. Yeah. This is a obviously concept video of the phone, although I think it could very much look like this with a small screen on the front. Then it opens up with this folding OLED screen technology to a single screen inside, 360-degree foldable display.
Yeah.
So I look at this and I feel like, oh, I don't want this.
Yeah, same.
But
my initial thing was it's a solution in search of a problem. But, you know, now that you've mentioned an older population, that makes perfect sense because you're talking about people where there may be either vision or dexterity issues.
Isn't that funny? I think to some degree, I always assume technology companies are designing for the next generation. Mm. Maybe they're actually just designing for baby boomers.
They have the money.
And the next generation will... do what
why
it does.
Why do you rob a bank? You rob a bank because
that's where the money is. It's not the 15-year-olds. It's the 60-year-olds.
Yeah.
I will say anecdotally, because I try not to make the, well, my grandma comparison, but this is an actual real my grandma comparison. She has, I think, like an iPhone 5C or something like that. And she doesn't really ever use that because a long time ago I gave her an iPad mini and she uses the iPad mini for most of the stuff that she does because that is that bigger screen that she it's still small enough for her to like carry around in her purse and things like that. But it's bigger than that tiny screen. And so she does most of her iMessage conversations on there, her email, this, that, and the other. And she has a computer, too, but she doesn't really ever use that. She's got that iPad mini that's like the perfect size for her. So I could see that definitely being a case where, you know, when you're out and about and you're just talking on the phone, because that's something that she still does, then you want that smaller device with you. But then when you get somewhere where you're like trying to see, okay, what's going on the screen? What are the messages and things like that? Yeah, to be able to fold that out and say, ah, okay, I can see this nice and big now is actually a pretty good idea.
Wow. My mind is blown. I'm going to have to think about this. Let's take a break because I got to figure out what you all just said. Wesley Faulkner lives in the future, apparently. He's at IBM where he's doing developer relations advocacy. Nice to have you, Wesley, at IBM.
Yep. Thanks for having me.
Micah Sargent, are you not at iMore, or you just want us to talk about Chihuahua coffee?
No, I've recently gone freelance, actually.
Hey, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
And we should follow you at chihuahua.coffee?
Yeah, it's got links to all the stuff I do. Or if you just want to see what I'm tweeting about, then that's at Micah Sargent on Twitter.
Nice. Well, that's exciting. Good luck in the new career.
Thank you.
Yeah, chihuahua.coffee. You have to figure out how to spell it. it's just like it sounds, right, Micah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chihuahua.
Chihuahua. Oh, it's that new Chinese phone everybody's talking about, the Chihuahua. I know that one. I got a Chihuahua 20 just the other day. No? No. And that's Lisa Schmeiser, who is keeping me honest, editor at IT Pro Today. She's an editor. She's already red-penciled me. All over.
Bring a big prop pencil next time and just haul it out.
I have one. We'll get it for you. Our show today brought to you by ExpressVPN. I don't know what the kids are using today, but I do know that keeping yourself protected and private online is a big deal, especially with all the news about security breaches and spying. You want to consider where is your data going and who's keeping an eye on things. We know you're being tracked online by social media sites, by marketing companies, frankly, by your internet service provider and your mobile phone company. They can record your browsing history. They often say, we know they sell it to other companies who want to profit for your information. Everybody's always talking about Google and Facebook, but your ISP is also, without any safeguards, keeping an eye on what you're up to. That's why I back my privacy, and you'll want to, too, with ExpressVPN. A strong VPN is your best way to stay safe and private online. ExpressVPN is easy to use apps. They run in the background on your computer, your phone, your tablet. You could turn them on with one click, secure and anonymize your internet browsing by encrypting your data, hiding your public IP address. Of course, ExpressVPN does not log, so you're completely anonymous. You could safely surf on public Wi-Fi without being snooped on or hacked. It's the number one VPN service. That's Tech Radar's rating. It comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Costs less than $7 a month. It is the best. I know people are, we get a lot of calls these days. I'm looking for a VPN. Go to expressvpn.com/twit. And they'll give you 3 extra months free with a 1-year package. expressvpn.com/twit. Add 3 months to your 1-year package free. ExpressVPN.com/twit. Protect yourself online now more than ever. Let's see. We were talking about the folding phone. I guess we've said everything we need to say about that. It's for old people. Now I understand. As an old person, I should have gotten that right away. Is there anything else to say about the new Apple stuff? We did talk about the fact that their unit sales are no longer going to be reported. That's kind of makes sense. I don't know. Some people say it's because Apple doesn't want you to know. But I'm lately been more convinced that it's just because it's not as important as how much money they're making per customer, which is what they will report, right?
And that was the argument that they made in the call. Now that Serenity Caldwell has moved on to the fruit company, I handle the transcription of the financial call for iMore.
Yes.
And they brought that up quite a bit. And then when the folks asked about it, you know, the analysts asked about it afterward, they pretty much just said the same thing over and over again. They might as well have just played a soundbite of Luca because it was what you just said. It's like, I think Tim Cook even ended the conversation by saying something like, when you roll up a cart at the grocery store and you, you know, get your total cost at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what each individual thing in the cart costs. And it doesn't matter sort of what that is. All you care about is the total that you get to at the end. And so the idea there, I think, is that Apple is focusing more on making sure that the products that it sells are, you know, the ones that make their customers happy. And there's the argument that, like, if we have analysts talking about how, well, the iPhone is now not doing well, then that kind of runs the risk of Apple not being able to focus on continuing this right product experience.
Yeah.
It's all very confusing, and I don't know what the real reason is, but I did kind of like Tim Cook's little thing at the end about shopping carts.
Speaking of shopping, you know this is Singles Day. Mm-hmm. It is Veterans Day, the 100th anniversary of the armistice in World War I, 100 years ago, 11-11-1918, and at 11-11 and 11-11 a.m., the war ended. But, of course, we commemorate veterans and on this day, and I think it's a good thing to do. There was a big parade in Petaluma today, a lot of fun. But in China, they're spending. Because 1-1-1-1 is a lot of ones, and it's Singles Day. I think Alibaba, this is one, it's probably invented, this is like, talk about a Hallmark holiday, invented this some years ago as a way to celebrate single people, but also it's their Black Friday.
Yeah.
And typically, worldwide, the number one buying day of the year, it's for the last 10 years it has been. And Alibaba, which is the kind of the Amazon of Asia, has set a record. They said in the first 85 seconds.
25 seconds, $1
billion. $1 billion. In the first 24 hours, $30.8 billion in sales.
Wow.
That's for one store, Alibaba. The record was last year, $25 billion. So that's a 20% increase year over year.
What I'd like to know is if bricks and mortar retailers are seeing a boost from this, or if they're actually losing business because Alibaba is locking up so much of it.
Yeah, but it's a China thing, though, right? We don't see that here, or do we?
I've seen some U.S. retailers who have I wish I could remember who it was. I was doing like the board clicking through on a Friday night in the couch brain dead thing, and I saw a U.S. retailer who was like, "Here's our Singles Day."
It's Singles Day,
and I remember thinking, "Oh, wow, it's come over here." So. You know, maybe
it's going to be just already Black Friday deals have bled into, you know, October. It's
well,
going to be
now Black Friday. There's Cyber Monday. There's Giving Tuesday. There's a green e-commerce holiday that goes into it, too. There's a holiday that's like a gray Thursday, I think they call
gray
it.
Gray Thursday.
What is Giving Tuesday? What is Giving Tuesday?
It's the idea that either you donate money that day or that you buy things where a percentage goes to charity.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, wow. it's another effort for e-commerce.
That's November 27th this year.
See?
But it's more than e-commerce, I would hope. It's right. It's about giving back.
Yeah. But there have been a number of these commerce-driven holidays. I mean, we've got Amazon Prime Day, which has spawned a whole lot of other retailers to trot out their own specials at that time, too. You know, Walmart was going toe-to-toe over that this year. Target was rolling things out at the same time, too.
All right, I'm going to get a little dystopian on your ass.
Oh, dear.
I shouldn't have said that, should I? Mm-hmm. we'll just rewind that. Mm. Tech CEO. Have any of you read Yuval Noah Harari's book, Sapiens, or Homo Deus, or his new one, which just came out, which I just got, but I haven't read yet. He is a Israeli philosopher, PhD mm-hmm. from Oxford, teaches at the Hebrew University in Jerusalem. Sapiens was amazing. And apparently he's become kind of a poster child in Silicon Valley. But the funny thing is, his book, 21 Lessons for the 21st Century, mm-hmm. is really about something that you would think the tech leaders wouldn't want him to say. Basically, that we are entering a fascist world run by tech companies democracy is over, in effect. Everything he says undermines the premises of advertising and engagement model, the models that Google and Facebook and everybody else supports. He's worried that because the tech revolution's work requires so few laborers, mm-hmm. Silicon Valley is creating a tiny ruling class and then a giant, he calls it the useless class. In the past, autocrats had to keep the peasants around because who else was going to grow their food? Mm-hmm. But in the future, the rich few, the one percenters, will have everything they need and they won't need the workers, which means they're just going to kill them.
That is the current season of American Horror Story. Like, that's this whole story there, seriously.
The useless class is literally useless. There's no reason for Silicon Valley to pay any attention to them or even listen to what they have to say. And he says that's one of the reasons that this universal basic income is so mm-hmm. popular. It's because, we'll throw them a bone. We don't really need them. But we're nice guys, so we'll give them enough money to live on. Maybe they'll buy some of our products. And apparently Silicon Valley loves this guy. He's going to dinners. Mm. He's in town for speeches.
Mm. I kind of agree, but I think it's mostly the government side rather than the tech side that's causing most of the problem.
That's what he says. He says because government is so dysfunctional, mm-hmm. at some point Mark Zuckerberg, Larry Page, Jack Dorsey, and most importantly Jeff Bezos are just mm-hmm. going to say, "Oh, you know what? Government doesn't work. Well, throw it out. We'll take it from here."
The issue is there is no government support. Like if you look at the postal system, there's UPS, there's FedEx, and then we have the postal system because it is deemed that getting mail, at least at the time, was more important than making money because people need to communicate. Mm-hmm. There is no equivalent for the digital age in terms of internet connectivity.
No.
And so the ability to move from one class to another is wider. The gap is wider because the access to information is further away. I mean, of course, we have libraries, which are being underfunded, and I think people are saying, why do we still have libraries? But they're very important because of that, of people who don't have access any other way. Mm-hmm. But there, if you look at like institutions that are trying to give accessibility to learn so that you can move forward, they're being challenged, saying, you know, government shouldn't be doing that for people. Government should get out of the business and leave it to the private sector. The government is pushing people to the private sector and not giving a safety net for those that the private sector chooses not to support. That's why, like, you know, those rural broadband problems, because the private sector should be taking care of that, but they choose not to. And so there is no recourse because there is no safety net because it is government ceding all of that, the most important part, to the private sector, and there's no recourse.
The government recently defunded programs that were designed either for rural internet access or low-income internet access. These programs were funded under the previous administration. They've been defunded under this one. I've done a couple stories on rural broadband, and what I've consistently gotten from centrist or right-wing think tanks when I ask them, why can't we do internet like TVA did electricity and water? And their answer is, well, technical standards change so fast. You don't want to waste a lot of taxpayer money on internet just to have it be upgraded in a few years. But what it comes down to is a more fundamental failure on the part of government, I would say, to argue that, no, access to the internet is at this point a utility. It's as important as a phone program, which they subsidized for years. It's as important as electricity. It's as important. And like Wesley said, the economic mobility, the ability to move from one class to another economically in this country is much, much less than it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 50 years ago. And it comes down to a failure. It comes down to both the government not making a case for itself and politicians not making a case to people that government is a way to provide basic infrastructure to allow people to create and access opportunities. I mean, but what this dystopian guy says is basically, opportunity. No one's going to.
No one needs opportunity.
Yeah. Which is, well.
It's very short-sighted. I mean, honestly, maybe I'm a cynic, but I just assume that really they don't want government to do anything, that private should do everything, that that's just kind of the.
So back in the 90s when I was coding.
Ideology of this, the dogma of this.
Back in the 90s movement. When I was coding, I freelanced on the side, and one of the pieces I wrote was asking why coders and website developers didn't unionize.
Right.
Because it was kind of crazy to me that all of these people were bragging about, oh, I worked 70 hours this week.
But they don't want to.
Well, this is the thing, is every developer I talked to was like, if I unionize, then someone else is going to be responsible for salary negotions. Someone else will determine my benefits.
Yes.
And I can't optimize my own value.
This is part of that same an arrogance. Yeah. It's part of that same arrogance that's driving this.
Everybody is under the impression that they're going to be the one who can maximize
it. I could do it best.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No collective vision at all.
But you take a look now, and we're getting to the point where programming can be something that is effectively written by tools. Like, you don't need people.
Right.
Unionization unionization would have done a whole lot of good for these guys back in the 90s.
You're playing right into this. This is from the New York Times article about Harari.
Yeah.
Harari's puzzled. Why is it that I've been embraced by Silicon Valley? And the Times writes, this is Nellie Bowles, by the way, writing, who's great. Mm-hmm. Part of the reason might be Silicon Valley at a certain level is not optimistic on the future of democracy. The more of a mess Washington becomes, the more interested the tech world is in creating something else. And it might not look like elected representation. Mm-hmm. Rank-and-file coders, exactly what you said, Lisa, have long been wary of regulation and curious about alternative forms of government. A separatist streak runs through the place. Yeah. Venture capitalists periodically call for California to secede or shatter or for the creation of corporate nation states. And this summer, Mark Zuckerberg, who incidentally has recommended Harari to his book club, acknowledged a fixation with
Caesar Augustus.
Caesar Augustus.
He had that in the New Yorker profile, too, where he's really into the idea of conquering and imposing peace.
Basically, Zuckerberg told the New Yorker, through a really harsh approach, Caesar established 200 years of world peace. You see?
The trains ran on time.
Depends on your perspective, right?
Yeah.
So, let me add one more piece to this dystopian puzzle. Mm-hmm. Sweden, this is the deputy governor of the Central Bank of Sweden writing for the World Economic Forum. Mm-hmm. Sweden is moving rapidly away from using cash. The outstanding value of cash in circulation has dropped to 1% of GDP. Basically, it's a cashless society. Mm-hmm. That sounds fine, right? We're all moving towards that. You use credit cards. They have something called Swish. Everybody in Sweden uses Swish to swish money. It's even become a verb. It completely bypasses, you know, central banknotes and coins. But here's the problem. If cash stops working, it leaves everyone to rely on the private sector for access to money and payment methods. It would be a historic change without precedent.
No, it's the company store all over again.
You owe your soul to the company store.
Yeah, think about it.
So, We're moving in that direction too, right?
Compensation. When you think about how many workers in America are compensated, it's not just salary. It's also access to health care benefits that won't bankrupt you. And that is dependent on the largesse of a company.
Can't blame them.
What they choose to pay for health insurance. So instead of it being something where, to get back to Wesley's point, instead of it being something where you've got a government as the regulatory body ensuring equality of access for everybody, you have people with wildly disparate levels of healthcare access at wildly disparate prices because it's linked to private corporations and private enterprise instead.
So what Sweden is proposing, and maybe this is a window into what our future might hold, is the e-krona. The central bank says we're going to have to create our own digital currency instead of cash so that there will be, the government will still have some role to play in the economic life of people.
Yeah.
You'll trade in your ordinary krona, one-to-one, for e-krona, which will basically appear as cash on your Swish account. I feel like we're going to see this in a few years. This will be proposed in the United States, don't you think?
I don't see how this works, though. They're trying. They said it won't be based on blockchain, and so
it will be. They just don't know. They just don't know.
Blockchain got mentioned.
Yeah.
And so, and then what? If you're a homeless person, someone has to have like
here's
a
your
meter
e-krona,
or a
buddy.
Writer.
Yeah, you need an you need a phone.
Yeah.
The reason they don't want blockchain is because blockchain is fundamentally decentralized technology. Mm-hmm. Where you don't need a bank if you have blockchain. Mm-hmm. Everybody has the ledger. But
well,
I mean
that depends on like what kind of blockchain. You can have a private blockchain.
Right.
You can have your control all of the nodes in the servers. That so you don't it doesn't have to be non-disputed and open. It could be a closed blockchain. So that's possible. And so you can distribute it, but all of the data centers are owned by you. So you're not. Also, if it was distributed and open, you could be open to a 51% attack. Have you heard of that?
Yeah.
When you have it.
I heard about that on Silicon Valley.
Yeah. And so
you lose control of the blockchain.
Yeah. So they could use blockchain. I don't know why they're outright saying they won't. Mm-hmm. But then same thing. Not only will they hand in your krona, you should get a krona and a phone. Or
I guess
some sort of krona reader.
Krona, you got a little krona card.
Yeah.
A krona card.
The flip side of this is the flip side is the Chinese social credit system.
That scary?
Which and this broke not broke, but this was basically something that grabbed headlines for a minute last month, where China is now assigning, for lack of better words, social credit ratings to individual citizens based on a wide variety of things, including quote unquote frivolous spending. So. This is of course one of the things you'd have to watch out for when you get a lot of government involvement in your currency and your spending life is when they start side eyeing what you purchase and assign a weight and a value to it.
But who would you prefer doing the side eyeing, Jeff Bezos or Donald Trump? I'm not sure which is worse, to be honest with you. I talked to a woman who was 13 years. Chief reporter for a news service in Beijing in China.
Yeah.
Recently left she was afraid of the government. Yeah. And I asked her about this social credit system. And she said, what's really interesting that's happened in China, China's always had, you know, these totalitarian leaders forever, really, if you include the emperors. But what's changed is technology. And that President Xi has so much more power because of cameras everywhere and digital technology and the ability to collect information about its citizenry and to use that information. I said, well, how do the people feel about this? And she said, well, it's interesting. They don't seem to really care. If you're middle class or higher, you like the social order it imposes. And if you're poorer, you like the improved economic mobility. You know, I remember even 10 years ago going to China and in a small village that was agriculturally based. They all had flat screen TVs. And our guide said, yeah, that's the gift of the year from the government. Last year was refrigerators. The year before was air conditioning. Government keeps the poor people happy by continually bribing them with goods, economic goods. Mm. Everybody's happy. Mm. Nobody's complaining except maybe the intellectuals or the Uyghurs or those in rebellion. Talk about a dystopia. That's coming.
We already
did. You know that? Did you know that Russians can see more blues than Americans?
They have different words for it, right?
Wait a minute.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Different colors of blue? Not the blues. Yeah. Not the.
No, there are different. There are literally different words for different
Robert
shades
Johnson,
of blue.
You're talking
and as a result, they
the color
them.
Blue.
They can see that that was the idea in that movie, Arrival.
The Giver?
In the Arrival.
Language informs how you think.
Yeah, it's an entire story.
Yes.
But yeah, I have a friend who's a Russian translator who talks about
that. In societies where they are not, or they don't have the words, or they don't have the culture around a certain idea.
Yes.
They can't necessarily distinguish
you're going.
Or see why one is better than the other, because it's just not in their vocabulary. They don't dream about it. It's not in their society. And so when you say, like, does this bother you? Then it's always going to be, well, this is how things are. This is how I've lived, and this is what I'm used to, as opposed to others who might speak other languages, visit to other locations, and get a bigger picture mm-hmm. and able to understand the world from a different context. So I know it seems like it's unrelated saying that Russians can see more blues, but it's more of the same thing of it being able to, if you have more context and you have more education around just the fundamental workings of what's allowed, not allowed, and if you can try to move a little bit beyond the construct of what's socially acceptable, then you can be able to say, yes, I want, this is a choice that I have, and be able to move there. So if they don't understand that there's a choice of not having this type of control, it's not in their vocabulary to talk about freedom, then yeah, I can see how they can say things are fine.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying not to get depressed. This has been our dystopia segment. I hope you've enjoyed it.
the biggest constant is change. You know, we're having conversations about things that were probably on maybe 10 people on the world's radar back in the 1990s.
Yeah.
And we don't know what transformative technology is coming and from where that will change people's interactions and priorities, you know?
But we're sitting in this. Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting thing. I mean, one of the reasons I always was fascinated by technology and ended up making it my mm-hmm. beat, and I suspect it's true for you too, Lisa,
yeah.
And you too, Micah, mm-hmm. is I wanted to be kind of on the sidelines of of the world that is most changing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's never boring. It's always interesting. And I kind of always knew it was important.
Yeah.
But now what we're seeing, and I don't know if I have the tools to cover it, what we're seeing is some dramatic, unexpected changes in our society. And I think we're all kind of grappling with that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And figuring out how to cover it. And I think figuring out our place in all of this. Mm-hmm. And I've seen people, you know, completely get out of this because it's sort of a depressing thing where, you know, you're busy covering products that release, but then you look right to the left.
I'm trained to talk about the A12X Bionic. I'm not here to I don't know anything about social justice and transformation of society. And yet that's the beat now, isn't it?
It's an important thing. And I want to bring up something. I think I've talked about it before on This Week in Tech, mm-hmm. but it's just one like very silly example of the way that, third-party companies are getting involved in government. And that is the very stupid program that Domino's, the pizza company, did.
Oh, the potholes.
They were covering potholes. Yeah.
I thought that was a joke until somebody said, no, they're really doing it.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, Domino's comes in and gives
brilliant
a grant
marketing
to the city to cover the potholes. And again, like that's not the local government doing any of that stuff. It's this pizza company that makes a bunch of money. It's mm-hmm. interesting.
Although, as a citizen of Pothole City, USA, Petaluma, California, I would like to volunteer. We will change our name to Domino's. If you just please fix the streets, please. Mm. That's all I ask.
Yeah.
Domino's California. I like it. Mm. It's not bad. I could live with that.
For no potholes, for sure.
First of all,
Domino's going to want to know what you're spending.
They've always said that all politics is local, and really, it's funny because you could talk about stuff going on in Washington D.C. and you don't get the immediate impact of any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But when there are potholes all over your town, because I don't know why. Because their city council is incompetent, or because there's no local revenue, or what? I don't know. That impacts you big. Mm-hmm. You realize immediately the importance of local politics.
It's the rains. It's there's something.
It rains. Look it.
No, because this.
I drive into Marin County,
yeah.
where it rains just as much, and the roads are perfect.
Yeah. No, but I'm going to say the pothole is usually predicated by extreme weather shifts, and we have to figure out.
It's going to get worse.
Well, this is an exciting infrastructure challenge. Look this way. It's a crisis-tunity, as the Simpsons would say. It's an exciting infrastructure challenge to figure out how to build basic infrastructure that's going to handle extreme weather events.
This used to be the butter and eggs capital of the world. It's going to be the pepperoni and sausage capital of the world, I think.
Now I really want a pizza.
We can call Domino's. It's the worst. Good things about it.
Oh, because you don't have to say good things until they fill in your potholes. When it's open.
Hey, I'll say bad things until you fill the potholes. Then I'll be nice. Mm-hmm. How about that?
I like their app. My daughter likes Domino's, and so we'll.
Why do kids eat Domino's?
Because it has no flavors, and children have Domino's no taste buds.
What's going on here? Now, Domino's also has a good gluten-free pizza. I can talk about that. Like, it actually is. I was surprised at how nice it tasted. Yeah. So when I am like, I don't know, really not feeling like making something myself, or, you know, praying that some new restaurant offers some sort of thing, then I'll get the gluten-free pizza at Domino's, and it's really good.
The app is ridiculously easy.
Domino's
though.
Is also the Netflix of pizza. You can order it on Twitter. You can order it via text message. You can order it like
frictionless.
Your smart speaker, you can order it any way that you can think of.
What's wrong with the world?
It's frictionless. That's what's because the first time it saved my order, and then the next time I logged in and they're like, do you want to order the same thing again? I thought, this is amazing. I don't have to think. I just have to click. It saved my location. It saved my payment information. It literally took me less than 20 seconds to order my kid the pizza that we were going to have while watching Netflix that night. And I thought, wow, this is how they get you.
This really fits this conversation. Like, just because we can order it online, we're going to eat crappy pizza.
No, I mean, sometimes we make a nice pizza, but there are some nights when you're just like, no, I can't do it. Like, some nights pizza.
The chat room is insisting that gluten-free and pizza don't belong in the same sentence. So what I had was a gluten-free bread-adjacent item with sauce and some vegetables on top.
Yeah, no, they talk about cardboard with ketchup. Baby. My daughter likes the thin crust, which is basically a saltine with a little bit of ketchup and pepperoni on it. So
I hate
everyone in the studio
so
is like recoiling. It's pretty awful.
You know, I was for a while thought, oh no, people are going to fight for democracy. We're going to stand up for human rights. But now I realize we'll even eat crap pizza as long as we can get it on our iPhone.
Though, like I had a friend who this week, with election week happening and all that, because the lines at her local voting polling place were 2.5 hours long, she ordered them pizza using her phone. See,
I did
that.
So
you
that.
Can fight what for democracy that, and get your pizza at the same time.
I actually sent $100 to Pizza to the Polls.
Well, there you go.
It would buy pizzas for people who are stuck in long lines. We were lucky enough not to have long lines here in Petaluma.
Yeah.
But I wanted everybody who's taking their time to vote. Polls.pizza. What happens now? I think that a couple of years it'll be back.
Tacos for 2020.
Recount pizza.
If anyone wants to launch tacos for 2020, that would
be
pretty,
it. Yeah. Pizza for the recount.
Ravioli for recount?
Yeah. Ravioli.
Tacos for 2020.
Chef Boyardee.
They sent 10,000 pizzas to 568 polling places in 40 states.
Wow. There's a lot going on with polls where you have a lot of people working very hard, and it's fundamentally very bulky.
Yeah.
We're disrupting technology. Here's a place where we'll do your laundry and give you a cookie, which was an actual startup app.
We'll do your laundry and give you a cookie.
Exactly. It was an actual startup for a while. And I keep thinking of all of the things you want to disrupt. Maybe take a look at making voting easier and more accessible to people. Or maybe take a look at filling potholes. Or maybe take a look at upgrading our civic infrastructure.
Nah. Laundry and a cookie.
Laundry and cookies.
Yeah. Let's take a break. All okay. We're going to get back to shiny objects that make you happy in a moment.
Can't wait.
There's got to be something shiny in here. Let me talk a little bit about something cool. This is Robinhood. It's an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, and cryptocurrency commission-free. it's a good name, Robinhood, because basically these guys are doing God's work. They're trying to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy. Other brokerages, as you probably know, charge up to $10 for every trade. Robinhood, they don't charge commission fees. You'll trade stocks and you'll keep all your profits. It's secure. It's encrypted. You get market data. You get charts. And it's a great app. You can place a trade with four taps. Boom, 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 boom. The web platform lets you view stock collections. The 100 most popular sectors like entertainment and social media are there. That's, you know, so I want to, let me look at the entertainment market basket or the social media market. You can view analyst ratings, buy, hold, and sell recommendations for every stock. You could discover new stocks. You could track favorite companies with personalized news feeds. Build your portfolio, and there's no commission. Custom notifications for price movements. If you've been looking for ways to invest, you got to download the app. And they're giving you a free stock of Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help you start when you sign up at twit2.robinhood.com. Twit, the number two, one word, twit2.robinhood.com. You'll get a free stock. You get started. I think this is great. No brokerage fees, no commission. Trade stock, keep it all. What could possibly be wrong? This is awesome. Twit2.robinhood.com. When I found out about this, I said, this is cool. I want to know more. Twit2.robinhood.com. We thank them so much for their support. Brand new sponsor. It's amazing. It's amazing. So, turns out people don't like Facebook that much.
Turns out.
So Pew does these great research studies on the internet use. They found out that 44% of people 18 to 25 have deleted their Facebook app on their phone. 44%.
Are they still on Instagram, though? Which is
Well, they are, yeah.
I mean, this is the thing.
And of this is a poll conducted for Fortune. 22% of Americans trust Facebook. Only 22%. Amazon, 49%. Google, 41%. Microsoft, 40%. None of this is great. Apple, for weirdly enough, less than Amazon, Google, and Microsoft, 39%. But Facebook, the bottom of the heap. Only 22% of Americans trust Facebook. I guess that's not a surprise.
So it's about trust, not so much about liking it.
Well, I don't think anybody likes it.
Okay, good. Yeah, that's
people
like
use
99.2%.
Do you suppose the trust issue has to do with Zuckerberg's the public perception of Zuckerberg as a CEO?
Yes.
Because you look at Tim Cook, who gets out there and he's, "Hi, everyone, I'm Tim Cook.
Yeah,
I care about privacy and human rights and a $1,200 phone."
Yeah.
And or you get Satya Nadella, who writes a book which is really, you know, "I believe in human potential and I believe in distributing opportunities equally. And I also believe that we're in a post desktop world." Or you even get Google CEO who's like, "Yeah, I will go to the airport and wave a sign around when a travel ban comes down." And then you get Zuckerberg, and I don't know if he doesn't know the optics that go with being a CEO, or he genuinely doesn't care. But I wonder how much of the Facebook trust problem is Zuckerberg's perceived reaction or response.
In a poll of adult Romans, only 22% trusted Caesar.
I was like, where's this going?
You don't have to be loved and trusted to change the world. And I think Zuck really thinks, I know he's a true believer, right?
Yeah.
I don't think he's cynical. I think he's a true believer that life is better when you're connected, blah, blah, blah. I also think he thinks he can do it better.
Problem.
He does have a PR problem. There's no question.
Yeah.
Five countries now are demanding he testify on data misuse. It's a joint international grand committee of members of the UK and Canadian parliaments investigating disinformation and online election influence campaigns. They've added Argentina, Australia, and Ireland. He's been invited by British and Canadian officials to attend the first joint hearing in November, but he's declined. No, yeah. Nah.
That's yeah. Exactly.
Nah, I don't really feel like it.
Yeah, I don't like traveling around the holidays.
It's raining.
It's raining. Yeah, it's raining. The helicopters don't work in the rain. Everyone knows that.
Creepy that. Facebook VR thing, then yeah. He'd be there.
But. I went to Puerto Rico and toured via VR. It's not possible, wrote Facebook officials in a letter, for Mr. Zuckerberg to be available to all parliaments, okay?
Why not?
The parliaments wrote, we are very disappointed with this dismissive response. Five parliaments are now calling on you to do the right thing by 170 million users in the countries they represent. This is I guess you could take sides in this. You could be on Mark's side and said, well, you know, come on, this is just a lot of grandstanding by politicians in these countries. After all, he did testify before the U.S. Congress in what was completely a sham, right? I mean,
that whole thing was interesting. Yeah. Just the way that went down and the questions he was asked and the tech support questions he was asked.
Well, I think it points to a fundamental disconnect between, again, with the tech industry thinks are its priorities and its messaging versus what people who are not in the industry may be receiving. Because I also would argue it's a failure on the part of the staffers for those Congress people to adequately write questions and educate them on what you have to ask and why.
But they even structured it badly because they only had 5 minutes. There was no time for follow up. They ended up grandstanding or asking how does this phone work?
No, like I said, it's a failure on all
everybody.
Sides.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
but if going back to the PR issue, that was a good thing for Mark.
Mm-hmm.
Because all the focus was on the dumb questions, not anything bad that Facebook did. And if he read the room right, especially in the European Union, they feel that they have no control of all of these American tech companies that are taking control of their citizens. Yeah. And if he refuses to show up, which he already is doing, they have more ammunition to feed the narrative that they don't care about us over here. They're going to do whatever they want without any thought that we can do anything against them because they feel that we are so dependent. He should show up. He should say, you know, I want to hear you. You're very important. Whether it's true or not, if you look on both sides, it would have been better. It'd be good for Mark and it would be better for these politicians to figure out for them to even say that, hey, we care about you. So we're bringing Mark in. And Mark says, hey, I care about you. So I'm going to go. And he's not reading the room correctly.
Well, he might want to read this graph correctly, although I have to say it's kind of goofy. How confident are you, this is the Fortune poll, in the leadership abilities of the CEOs of each of the following companies when it comes to ethical use of data and private information? And 77% of respondents said that they were at least somewhat confident that Jeff Bezos was going to protect their private information.
What?
But only 59% said Mark Zuckerberg.
I guess if you don't tell people how you're using their information, they're just like,
Jeff seems like a nice guy.
Yeah.
He looks good.
I've got this tower in my house I can talk to, and so nice to me.
I love Jeff. Jeff Bezos, number one. Tim Cook, number two. Satya Nadella, number three. Sundar Pichai, number four. I bet you half the audience didn't even know who Sundar Pichai was.
Yeah.
Mark Zuckerberg, number five, the lowest. 59% at least somewhat confident that Facebook would use their information ethically. I am confident. That's why I bought a Facebook portal, which will be coming soon. And I'm going to put that in my house. Two of them. Yeah, well, you have to have two because...
Did you get the spinny one?
Yeah. The camera that follows you around uncannily, like Mona Lisa's eyes.
See, are you going to call me and read me a story?
Yeah. Would you like me to?
To go back to the Chinese surveillance thing and the talk about vocabulary, do you realize that outside this country, it probably seems insane that we pay money to voluntarily bring surveillance devices into our house?
We're begging them.
Yeah.
Please.
We're like, ooh, this is a perk. You know, I'm sure that and we're swimming in this culture. So it's like, oh, you know, we can opt in or not. Maybe somebody from another culture like... Why would you do this? You control nothing about it.
Yeah.
You don't control your data. You don't even know where your data is going. You don't know who's viewing
your
data.
They give you a little clip you could put over the camera if you want.
Oh, that's mighty magnanimous of them. But like...
I trust Mark.
Yeah.
That's like a, what's that Echo story?
Go ahead.
I was going to say the story about the Echo and the court order.
And the murders, the double murders. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, Micah. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to, I have an Echo Spot. That's the one that's like circular and has the little screen on the front.
Did you buy that because it was number one on Oprah's list?
Oh, heavens no. I got it
yes,
because I wanted
did.
To have. No, I when did it get on Oprah's list? I got
it's
it like
number
right
one.
As it launched.
It's her number one tech gadget.
I got it when it launched, and I was really excited to have that clock, that digital clock. And I had first had it in my office, and I realized that I wasn't ever looking at it because, duh, I have a clock on my computer and on my watch everywhere else. And so I thought, oh, the bathroom would be a really nice place to have a clock. But I don't want this camera. So I took it apart and I completely covered up the camera on the inside with a piece of electrical tape and then put it all back together. And now the camera, even because they have a camera off button, but I'm paranoid and I'm like, I don't trust that camera off button.
Do you think Jeff Bezos wants to watch you poop?
I think Jeff Bezos wants to see what toilet paper I use so that he can
get
toilet paper to me.
Yeah. Is that it's a Cottonelle or Charmin? I can't tell. Can you look closer?
Also, they
zoom
should
in.
Get a tie
zoom
pen
in.
And work on those corners.
Center. Enhance. Zoom in. It's Charmin. It's definitely Charmin.
We got to make Amazon's basic
toilet
paper.
They don't need
paper,
a camera. Pal. You buy it on Amazon. They know.
I literally do buy it on Amazon.
Of course they don't need a camera in your... I have my spot. Mm-hmm. It couldn't put it on the bedside table for the same reasons. My wife is just as nutty as you, Micah. And so I have it in my closet.
In your closet?
Yeah.
He's put his tech in the closet.
I keep my spot in the closet. You know why? It's a nice little clock. I can say what the weather's going to be like.
Mm. Okay.
I dress in my closet. It's a little bigger than just a little
sense.
Closet. Oh. It's a big closet. I don't ever want to come out. It's in there, and I live in there, and I've got a little spot, and I could talk to it and listen to music on a tinny little speaker.
But it's looking at what you're putting on and deciding
absolutely
some new clothes
well,
for you.
That's the Amazon
that
wardrobe model, remember? That was going to be the idea
that
it could recommend to
look.
You, oh, your outfit looks amazing today or something
but that
like
at least. So here's Oprah's favorite things, mm-hmm. which, by the way, is on Amazon. So that might explain mm-hmm. why number one is the Echo Spot.
Wow.
Also, the dog DNA test by Embark. How come we don't have them as a sponsor? DNA for your dogs, truffle-infused hot sauce, Carbonator 2 by Arky, empowered brass bracelets.
Do you think she owns all of these things?
You got to really wonder where this list comes from.
Yeah, who does this?
Yeah. Letters for a Year of Gratitude by Chronicle Books, mm-hmm. Chai Private Tea Trio, Lit Bag by Person. It feels like it's just one big ad, but here she is. Here's Oprah.
Looking very excited about
saying, I love that coffee maker. maybe she's trying the Insta Shiatsu heated foot massager by True Medic.
Do you know how the Oprah's favorite things get picked?
No.
So
no. You know?
Yes.
You're on this show. You're here at the right time. How do they get picked?
Companies start sending things to her as early as
can
July.
Can you imagine
she
gets?
All sorts of, and the companies and the staffers are responsible for vetting it by category. And they break it down, and then Oprah does the final filter. But they have to winnow it down from literally thousands of products to the 100 or
and
so
what
that
happens
Oprah reviews.
To all of the other products?
I didn't find out because I suspect the answer is, I got to take them home. The person who's telling me this didn't want me to know.
Yeah. So who got it?
I would actually love to know what the Harpo rules are on gifts and things like that, because I know in a lot of newsrooms there's the rule that
you're not supposed to keep that stuff.
You can't bring stuff.
We send everything back.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. But I know in some companies,
except that big TV, I'm keeping.
and in some glossy media properties that are
how many X5 multi-port USB car chargers by RapidX do you think she got? This got on the list.
Yeah,
this is one of the top. Oprah writes, each of these X5 car chargers with extra long cord can simultaneously boost up 5 devices from phones to tablets. Translation, both front and back seat drivers can get some juice without coming to blows. Signed, Oprah.
You know that she's got like a staff of ghostwriters to do that. Oprah is not tapping this out for every...
Oprah wrote that. Says Oprah wrote that.
Someone in the chat said that those extra items, the one that don't make the 100, they send to Martha Stewart.
Oh, Martha, there's a package for you. Here she is looking at
I love Martha Stewart.
Soap. Different soaps.
Oh, what soaps made the list? Is it goat soap?
The La Chatelaine Ham Cream Tin by Tante Savon
Incorporated.
You know, that's my favorite hand cream tin, I got to tell you.
It is the of all the ham cream tins in all the world. Faux fur mittens by Glamour Puss.
We've officially reached the shiny things portion of
this. This is I told you I'd have them.
Okay.
Professional lasagna trio pan. Wait a minute. Why make one lasagna when you can make when you have a family of varying appetites, writes Oprah. These will come in handy. All three pan sections are lasagna noodle size. Great for that gang of vegetarian, gluten-free, and carnivorous eaters.
I thought it was because the corner pieces of lasagna are the best.
The best. The more corners.
The cheese gets more crunchy.
This is a 12-corner pan.
Yeah, see?
Why have a 4-corner pan when you could have 12 corners?
Exactly.
They have a brownie pan like that, too, where every like piece is an edge piece.
Yes. Because we live in a really...
That's on Micah's favorite things list.
Lisa made me buy...
Micah, if you tweet that list, I will probably buy
I would buy Micah's
of it.
List.
I'm serious.
But you have to write every description. Lisa made
me buy
a muffin tin because I would make... There it is. Baker's there Edge is. Nonstick Edge Brownie Pan. It looks like a little maze for brownies. A brownie maze.
A delicious dessert maze.
It's amazing.
I used to make breakfast muffins and Lisa would tear the top off.
Yeah.
And not eat the bottom.
Muffin tops.
So she bought me
an entire Muffies Seinfeld places. Episode about the
that's
muffin
right.
tops.
And what happens to the bottoms, right? Yeah. Uh-huh. So there, you can buy a muffin top tin.
Yeah.
Just don't recommend little... it. It only makes the tops. Well, it's very shallow.
Oh, okay.
Soapy. I have it. If you want it, I'll send it along to you.
I'll pass on that one. Yeah, not on my list.
You don't really need that. Organic coffee-infused Vermont maple syrup. For those of you who, I used to drink maple syrup infused coffee. That was good.
Oh, for one moment, I thought you were just going to leave out the coffee part of that.
Oh, I love maple syrup.
Every day I start with a shot of maple syrup.
Well, it goes great with your holiday dippers by Eli's Cheesecake.
What is a holiday dipper?
It's a cheesecake on a stick.
It's so, a festive constellation.
Oh, and here's, you know, they have to show pictures of Oprah trying this stuff or you wouldn't believe it.
Oh, she's using
the Clarisonic. Yeah, I use
right
one
now.
Of those. Oh, yeah, Oprah. Here she comes. Here, Oprah.
But the pictures make it look like she spends like all of 5 minutes on each product.
Yeah. You know, this is like, here, let me.
Oh, this is just amazing. You know, Amazon
so here's an
love,
Oprah.
Amazon must love that we're giving them free advertising.
This guy makes $400,000 a year showing Oprah. Correct.
Ridiculous. Yeah.
And can you imagine, like, if picking up goat soap is your job? Blender. Like, that's what you do for the year. You're like, ooh, what are the trends in goat soap this year? Are they shaped?
Oprah's favorite.
I'm a connoisseur of fine goat soap.
Goat soap's good.
Yeah.
If you don't mind smelling like a goat. Well, here's lots of videos of Oprah. Wait a minute. I got to see this. Oprah trying a smokeless indoor grill. This can only end in disaster.
It's going to.
No, she's not really tasting the grill. She's eating a burger.
She's not tasting the grill.
She's not.
I hope not.
Oh, there's Oprah's friend. Gail. What's her name? Gail.
Gail is on. Aww.
Well, that's her best friend, right?
It's good to be Gail, I think.
Good to be Gail. Like, that's who gets all the extras.
She's like, yeah.
Oh, look, they have little stickers printed up, yes or no. And that
oh,
got
that's
a yes.
Fun. Yeah. I wouldn't be part of that. Like, yeah. All right,
that's
you get a
yes. This is a long list. Holy cow. And this is all, so Amazon sponsors this basically. Mm-hmm. So you can buy all this stuff on Amazon. They got like a burger kit.
It's not just a burger kit. It's a truffle burger kit.
See, this is when I saw this, she recommended this, which is, there are many 360 degree cameras. I don't know anything about burger kits, but I know that you should not buy the Theta SC360 still in video camera by Ricoh.
So what I'm admiring about the way this is set up is you've got these beauty shots of the picture of the products, and then you've got Oprah's personal endorsement. Mm-hmm. There are no price tags.
Well, you shouldn't have to worry about how much it's going to cost.
I just think it's very, very interesting that even when you click through, I've seen, for example, the slow juicer.
Yeah.
The initial picture
Let's
in
click
Oprah's
through.
Favorite thing.
Yeah, it's $559.
See, there you go.
And Lord have mercy.
But by then, you're in. I am
betting that, and they've got the data on you. Where did you click? And what's
your my God, I just told them.
And what's your price limit?
Yeah.
And it's probably got like an Oprah tag on there.
Bezos is already in your closet, though, so you don't even worry about your clicking.
I'm just saying that this is usually with magazine gift guides, they almost always have price tags attached. And what I find interesting about this Amazon one is you have to go through, you see the product by the third exposure to the product. That's when you finally get the price. But by that point, you've already seen it twice. And are clearly committed.
It's in my
to,
head. No, exactly. That's advertising.
Yeah. Yeah. I hate when they make you put it in the cart before you can see the price. Yeah. It's like, you can see the price of this in your cart.
Yeah, their toy catalog has no prices.
Nothing makes me feel like old man yells at cloud like that. Where they're like, you'll see the price. You put, no, I won't see the price, and I'm not getting.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, no, I'm not putting it in my cart. So.
Yeah. Why do they that? By the way, just to see if you're willing to buy, and then if you reject it, they know that the price is too high.
Probably.
Yeah. Yeah. So Wesley wanted to know about Amazon Echo murders.
Mm, yeah.
So here for you, Wesley, New Hampshire judge.
I am not affiliated with the murders. I'll just say that.
IBM did not endorse
these murders.
He was
in Austin at the time. But you know what? We could find out because we're getting all of the Echo stuff. A judge has ordered the Amazon handover data in a 2017 murder case. They have a suspect who has pleaded not guilty. There will be a trial in May. And so what the police asked for is not only all the Amazon Echo audio files, because frankly, I don't know if that would be useful, but associated data, which might be like what phones were paired to the smart speakers. Mm. So you could know, does Amazon know when you're home? Yeah, because your phone arrived, right?
Mm. Mm.
Prosecutors believe there's probable cause to think there's evidence on the Echo, like audio recordings of the attack. When you're getting murdered, you don't go, Echo, record this.
No,
it was. It was. That's not likely.
Well, what I find interesting is Amazon's official policy is, well, we didn't seek to obstruct justice. We're just protecting the privacy rights of Echo users.
Right. So they fought it.
But the thing is Amazon has never really explicitly outlined what your rights, privacy rights are as an Echo user, or specifically what the relationship is with your data. So what rights are they protecting? Have they defined those rights to begin with?
Amazon told the Associated Press it would not give up data without a valid and binding legal demand properly served on us. So you can't just go over to Amazon and say, hey, can I just, you know, I'd like to take a look at that.
I'd like to one-click on this download, please.
Yeah. Remember, the same thing happened in Arkansas, and Amazon refused and eventually didn't have to hand it over because they had other evidence that was effective. I feel like police are going to, and I don't blame them, if they're trying to solve a crime or trying to build a case, this in this case is probably the prosecutors trying to build a case, ask for whatever they can get, right? Go to the phone company, subpoena all the phone records. They don't know if there's anything there, but they're going to find everything. And that's kind of the issue. And this goes to another case we talked about last week where a judge ruled that you can't force somebody to give the password up on their phone unless you have a specific bit of information you're looking for. Mm-hmm. I think that there is this notion that you're protected against law enforcement or prosecutorial phishing expeditions. Well, there might be something there. Let's just see what we can find. You know, maybe there'll be something there. That's not it. In this case, the judge said no. And so I don't know how much the prosecutors told the judge. Like, they said there's probable cause to believe there's evidence on the Echo. What's the probable cause? Echo doesn't record everything. It only records.
Wouldn't it be a lower bar to say, can you show me if the Echo was triggered and for how long? And that way they can get information to know, like, oh, well, we know the murders are here, or the alibi for the suspect is for this period. Right. And so that's the only snippet that could pertain to this case instead of asking for the whole day.
Yeah, but it doesn't sound like that's what they said. They said we want all the recordings for that time, as if they knew that the victim shouted Echo right before she was stabbed. I don't know. I don't know. I worry about. See, this is the problem, because we have all these technological marvels in our home that are that do have information, and I worry about police just saying, "Well, we might as well just ask for it.
Yeah.
Let's see what we can find," because that's not actually supposed to happen.
again, no. If you are the one who's voluntarily bringing this surveillance device into your home.
Oh, but maybe you're opening yourself up, you think? No. No.
But what about the rights of the people in the room that didn't opt into this, right?
The murderer didn't opt in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Murderer didn't want to know.
That would be a heck of a case.
Record this. Yeah. That's why you want a spot. So if somebody murders me in my closet,
I mean, exactly.
You're in your closet. You see somebody. You're like, all right, you got to get this on film.
Record this in the video.
Send
there
it off.
Is, and I have it on my phone, a shortcut so that when I get pulled over by the popo. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I saw that shortcut.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if I'll have the presence of mind to use it, but it's kind of interesting. It's called, I think I say, Siri, I'm getting pulled over. And then this is what it does. It pauses the music, turns on Do Not Disturb, sets the brightness to zero so they can't see what my phone's doing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is from, this is not the ACLU app. This is a Apple Siri shortcut. There is an ACLU app, but this isn't that. Gets the current location, sends a message to my wife saying, I'm getting pulled over. My current location is here, latitude and longitude. Then it opens the camera up, starts shooting a video, saves that video to the photo album, and then sends that to my blog. Here's a video of the police interaction. Robert A. Peterson put this up on Reddit. Mm-hmm. Uploads the video to the iCloud and to the Dropbox. And, I have to give it access to Dropbox. I'll do that after the show. And then it turns everything back on.
I love that. Honestly. I mean, I think that
that's the best used Apple shortcuts I've ever seen.
Yeah, exactly. Cause genuinely I was going through that whole website looking for like, none of these make any sense or things that I need. And I saw that one and I was like, this is a public service. This is really cool.
Yeah. I don't actually get arrested or pulled over because I'm white and an adult male.
I got pulled over for the first time the other day. I was on the highway. And so I work from home, so I hardly ever drive my car anywhere. I was on the highway and I had completely forgotten that my registration tag on my license plate had expired. And never have I ever before been pulled over. So I was freaking out, but, you know, playing it cool. But I was still very scared because I just never had that happen before. And thank goodness the guy was super nice and everything went well. But, you know, just that fear that exists there. It's like, it's good to have that if you need
it. It's got to be a tense interaction. And I also feel for the law enforcement officer because he or she is walking up to a car. You don't know what the heck's going on there. Somebody who has expired registration could be anything. You could be especially because you're a little brown. You could be a drug dealer.
Yes, I am, in fact.
You know what I tell my kids? When you get pulled over, put your hands on the wheel. Mm-hmm. Don't move them.
Yep.
Sit them there. And then when the officer asks for your license registration, say, okay, it's in my glove compartment. Is it all right if I reach down there now?
Yep. And that's exactly what I did. Yep. I explained as I was, you know, moving around in my car. And I mean, that's what we all get told.
It's fraud. So. It's terrifying.
Yep.
You know, and much more so for some people than others, unfortunately. The DEA and ICE are hiding surveillance. Yeah. Are hiding surveillance. Are people pretty nice in Austin to you, Wesley? They know you.
No. Nobody knows me. I don't know.
You ran for... wait a minute. You ran for office.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're well known.
Well, I would have won if I was well known.
Oh.
Yeah. I've had my fair share of problems with the cops. Like, here's my phone. Let's see if you can see it.
Yeah.
And... if you click it, I don't know if you can see that.
What's
but
it say?
It says, I do not consent to search.
Oh, nice. Does that work?
Well, I hope not. I mean,
let me put that on my phone. I do not consent to search. That should stop everything.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. We'll let you go.
Yeah. So, There's problems.
It's
got to
be scary. Really, if you're an African American, it's got to be terrifying. But again, I also understand police officers who have to confront unknown situations every day, and that's scary too. I get it.
I would. A little off topic. So my sister went through the police academy, And the paramilitary style training that they give cops is that they always perceive that there's a danger.
Yes.
Better go to court than come home in a box, kind of a thing.
Wow.
And I think that persistent drilling of people are dangerous and the scenarios they build up is inherent to the system. And
wow.
The way they're set up, it doesn't matter if what color you are, but it amps up people's perception of there might be danger. And
right.
So if you see someone who is disarming, then you're like, okay, well, I can relax for this person. But if someone who is remarkably matches in your brain could be a danger, it's no longer a 5. It's now a 10
That's
or
right.
a 50.
That's right. That's right. There was in Petaluma, there was a law enforcement officer some years ago shot out in the country. My wife, a day or two later, was driving in that area, you know, clearly not a threat, but was pulled over by sheriffs, all 5 of them with guns drawn and aimed at her.
Whoa.
And it's exactly that. It's amped up, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, she doesn't, I think, look like a threat in any respect, but it's amped up because they were nervous because somebody had been shot a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
And that's inherently a dangerous situation if you've got 5 people with guns trained on you.
And the authority is the biggest hammer that they have, saying, do what I say. And
yes.
if people say no, they feel like, well, I said to do it. So people's rights get trampled all the time because people feel that their authority is being
yes.
questioned, even if the
yes.
law is not being broken.
Yes.
And so that's also extremely
yeah,
scary.
That's...
There was like a teacher who was told to get out of the car, and she asked why. I think she was maybe 120 pounds, and she got yanked out of the car. And that happened here in Austin, just because she asked why. And just questioning authority sometimes can just feel like an escalation to someone who feels that they have every right to tell you what to do.
Be careful out there, kids. You ever hear of a company called Cowboy Streetlight Concealments?
No.
Yes.
Terrifying.
According to Quartz, Cowboy Streetlight Concealments has been selling hidden video cameras to ICE and the DEA. They get placed in streetlights. It's Cowboy Streetlight Concealments. We only know this because we've seen the bills, $22,000 since June for video recording and reproducing equipment, $28,000 from that was for the DEA, $28,000 from ICE for the same period of time. So just be aware, it's probably not illegal to put hidden cameras in streetlights. They also apparently are placing covert surveillance cameras inside traffic barrels.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy this. Here's an ad for the covert traffic barrel shell. It's a PTZ camera, which means they can aim it. There's a
now,
little...
what is the idea that you, like, what can you see with one of those cameras? Is it?
I guess because it's right there and you can aim it, you can see anything. It's a powerful, fully custom, pre-configured
licenses.
Covert outdoor digital video surveillance system.
What a great way to track license plate traffic.
That's common.
Okay, license yeah. plates. Because
well,
that's what I was thinking. You couldn't just point it at a person and figure out something about, you could assume, but.
For example, if you're doing surveillance and you want to figure out if there's somebody who has regular meetups and you want to establish a pattern where they know it, where they may know somebody, you can track how often they're driving a specific place. Is there any frequency to it? Can that frequency then be correlated to transfers of money or transfers of collateral?
Here's the thing to look for. If in your town, instead of fixing potholes, they proposed a smart LED streetlight system. Apparently, this is exactly what they do. And there's no oversight. There's no public debate. They just put in a smart LED streetlight system. Each light has a camera.
Whoa.
Yeah.
So it's not just, it's not lights that are LED.
No, they're
it's
smart.
Lights that are LED, but then also a camera is built in.
Yeah, they're smart because they have cameras in them.
Lord have mercy.
Yeah. And by the way, of course, this ties into the story about Amazon offering face recognition to the Department of Homeland Security. You talked about China and the social currency system and facial recognition and all that, but it's not just China. not just China.
The truth is, it doesn't scare me that much that the government's doing this, because I'm guessing this is somewhat targeted, because these can't be super cheap. They have to spend the money where it makes sense. The problem is that you can't just trust the government to have this information. You have to trust the government not to ever lose this information.
Right.
And so if anybody cracks their system and gets access to this data, it could and how ubiquitous like machine learning and facial recognition is to the general public, China could get it or whatever and be able to pull in a whole bunch of information. And I just don't trust the government to keep this information.
Yeah. No, that's a very good point.
I don't trust people within the government not to use it for selfish or
inappropriate
ends, because all you need is somebody who has a grudge against somebody else.
My ex-wife's been driving down that street. I want to see where she's going.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're putting cameras in the chat room. Somebody said, I think that's a good idea from now on. We're keeping an eye. I'm keeping my eye on you. I have a camera on my front door. I think the other side of this is it's nice as an individual to have cameras on your property. I was never a big believer in that, but I have a camera on my front door. I have a Ring video doorbell, and that's been very useful to see when somebody comes to the door, to know when people are coming and going. When packages arrive, I know that they're there. When somebody rings the doorbell, I can answer them even if I'm not home, which adds to the security in my house. Now, Ring's, besides reinventing the doorbell, they've got the new home alarm system. This is awesome. Ring is one of our sponsors, I should mention. We all know traditional alarm companies make their money not so much in the gear, although they do seem to love having an installer come out and charge you thousands of dollars to put this stuff in. But then your troubles begin, because they put you on a two or often three-year contract at $45 or more a month for their monitoring. Ring has decided to change that entirely. The Ring system is easy to install. You could do it yourself. And by the way, it's easy to remove when you move, so it's great for renters. It's an affordable home security system. There are no long-term contracts. You build a system that's right for your home. You can have it up and running in minutes with a base station that keeps your alarm system online and connected to mobile devices, a keypad which arms and disarms your alarm system, contact sensors for your windows and doors, motion detectors to keep an eye on hallways, and a range extender. So if you wanted to reach out to the garage or the shed, you could do that too. And the Ring Alarm Security Kit is very affordable. It gets you started with home security for $10 a month. No long-term contract, professional monitoring, $10 a month. I love my Rings, and this is a great alarm system for anybody, renter or homeowner, that wants to protect their family, their loved ones, their house affordably. The Ring Alarm Security Kit, available at ring.com and retail stores all over the country. Everybody knows and trusts Ring. Now you can get whole home security from them for only $10 a month. Go to ring.com/twit to learn more. ring.com/twit. We gave you the bad news. I'll give you some good news. This is great. So VirusTotal is a company owned by Chronicle, which is owned by Google, and it keeps track of it's also playing music in my ear. It keeps track of malware. And the U.S. Cyber Command has now started uploading malware samples that they collect from overseas, if you will, to VirusTotal. And already VirusTotal says, this is amazing. We're getting some stuff we've never seen before. The first submission for something called LoJack malware included files that weren't previously in VirusTotal. We've talked before about how, exploits created or found or discovered and weaponized by the NSA and other government agencies have leaked out. And that's not good. But this is good that they're at least keeping an eye on this stuff and then sharing it instead of keeping it to themselves, sharing it to help us all be secure. So U.S. Cybercom's decision to provide these malware samples to VirusTotal and let the world know about it is probably a good thing, although there are those who are saying it's part of the new name and shame effort on the part of Western governments, who have lately been very active, and maybe this goes back to the Bloomberg Supermicro case, in exposing and indicting Chinese, Russian, Iranian, and North Korean hackers. Sometimes I worry we're being manipulated a little bit you know, oh, there's a real threat out there. We've got to do something about it. I don't know.
Who's would be doing the manipulating?
Well, U.S. Cybercom, perhaps. You know, we talk about this Supermicro thing, you know, ad nauseum when it happened, the Bloomberg story, and how all the companies involved denied it vigorously, demanded retractions. Mm-hmm. Bloomberg has stood by its reporting and has not retracted. And we're really at a kind of a stalemate right now. There is the possible theory that Bloomberg was played by U.S. intelligence officials who wanted to scare us about the supply chain, in particular about stuff from China.
Holy moly.
I talked to Huawei the other day. Mm-hmm. You know, they make a really nice laptop. It's a Chinese company, I think part owned by the Chinese government, so they're not necessarily our friends. Mm-hmm. But they make a beautiful laptop. They make an amazing phone. We're going to talk about that in a second. But that phone isn't sold in the United States because even though they were about to do a deal with AT&T and Verizon, the U.S. government scared AT&T Verizon off, said, no, you better not carry that Huawei Chinese phone. Mm-hmm. And Huawei's decided not to sell it in the United States because without a carrier deal, it's very hard to succeed. They don't want to spend the marketing money to just, you know, create demand for a phone they can't sell.
Yeah.
Same thing with 5G equipment. That they don't want Chinese-made 5G equipment right here in the States.
Lenovo's Chinese. Everything we buy is made, and much of what we buy is made in China. So the supply chain is clearly a threat, mm-hmm. vulnerability. But I also, it's hard to know what's true nowadays, isn't it?
Mm. Oh, golly, yeah. I just saw, I can't remember what it was. There was something just the other day where it was more of that technology that shows how folks are able to talk, and then it makes it look like the person is speaking. And we just had that whole story about the CNN press guy.
Deep fakes.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. And then we had the story the other day.
Jim Acosta.
They sped it up and slowed it down just right to make it look the way that it did.
Looked like he was karate chopping an intern when in fact he was just kind of fending her off. Some said that had been modified. The InfoWars editor who made the video said, no, I didn't modify it. I just zoomed in.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what's true, honestly. And that's the problem. It's very hard. We're tech journalists. We can't even figure it out. I don't know how an average person is supposed to figure it out.
It makes me feel really jaded, honestly. I just seeing so much stuff, and I'm at a place where I'm going, do I believe this?
And
I have the ability to check everything, you know what I mean? But not everybody thinks about that.
That's a well-known, to pile on, Russian technique, propaganda technique, is confuse you, mm-hmm. bury you under conflicting stories to the point where you don't trust anything you read.
Right. And then you have this Chinese AI anchor where you can just feed it whatever you want and it'll say the news exactly how the state says it.
I like that. Where can I get that?
It's so Blade Runner-esque. Yeah.
Let me get that story.
Yeah.
So this is this the AI news anchor? So this is actually something that's on Chinese TV. This is Xinhua News Agency, the world's first artificial intelligence news anchor. They showed it at the... We want to see it? It looks a lot realer than those fake ones we've seen elsewhere. Let me turn up the sound. Here is
the real anchor.
No, this is the fake anchor. This is
Hello, everyone. I'm an English artificial intelligence anchor. This is my very first day in Xinhua News Agency. My voice and appearance are modeled on Zhang Zhao, a real anchor with Xinhua. The development of the media industry calls for continuous innovation and deep integration with the international advanced technologies. I will work tirelessly to keep you informed as texts will be typed into my system uninterrupted. I look forward to bringing you the brand new news experiences.
I look forward to when the AIs fight each other.
At least you can tell it's an AI, right?
But
honestly, they could probably make one you couldn't tell, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, that's just like, they're just showing us that, but they've probably got one that's, I mean, maybe
pay
I'm
no
AI
attention
right now.
Pay no attention to that, Micah Sargent. Look at this over here.
This very much reminds me of the William Gibson Adoro trilogy.
Yes.
Which is...
What a great story.
Yeah. Where one of the characters is blackmailed into doing something by somebody... basically creating a deep fake video of him and pointing out they can create a digital model.
I can have you do anything I want.
Exactly, yeah. We need another shiny thing, Leo. Quick.
Yeah, what's going on, Leo? It keeps being so sad.
Elon Musk says if you want to save people from the fires, you need a Model X or a Model S with the bioweapon defense mode. I actually have a Model X. And as I was driving around Petaluma, avoiding potholes, I did use the bioweapon defense to filter out the smoke.
This is like Blade Runner 2040.
How was it?
Works.
Did it? Oh, that's great. No smell or anything?
Nope.
Yeah. Wow.
And here's a measurement of the particulate matter. It was very high. It was well over 400 in some areas. The bioweapon defense mode is a hospital quality HEPA filter, which eliminates the particulates. So anybody wants to go for a ride, my Model X. See, we who have money are going to survive. You guys.
Oh, dear, Leo. Careful.
Eat the rich is a slogan for a reason. Eat the rich is pretty much the same as eat organic.
Did you know?
Pasture raised. Eat.
You can sign up for a service from the U.S. Postal Service. I signed up for it. And by the way, I'm getting way too many texts now. That it's called, what is it called?
Informed delivery. Yeah,
yes.
Informed delivery. I love it.
You're a member?
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah, me too.
What? Okay, yeah. I just found out about this. So I signed up, and then last night, at, 3 a.m, I got a text saying, item status out for delivery. It's been scanned. It's coming your way soon. Delivered at mailbox. I mean, hundreds of text messages, all the mail. I guess
texts.
Oh, well, you don't have to do text. You could do it in other ways.
I get an email and it sends me a little photo of a scan of whatever mail is coming to me.
Oh, I want the pictures.
Yeah.
That's nice. Because so I guess the automated, anything that's automated, scanned by the automated equipment will show up here.
Yep.
Apparently, ID thieves are abusing the service, signing up as you. Ugh. Krebs on Security says it's not too hard to sign up as somebody because they do have identity proof, but they ask you questions that basically you can look up the answer on the internet, you know, where you lived, stuff like that.
I think they pull it from your credit report is where the questions come from.
Yeah, it looks so like it. Like, did you ever live in this house? How much did you pay for it? That kind of stuff.
What car did you have at this point? Yeah.
According, Facebook quiz.
There's an internal alert sent by the Secret Service November 6th to its law enforcement partners. They're talking about a recent case in Michigan in which 7 people were arrested for allegedly stealing credit cards from residents' mailboxes after signing up as those victims. So they can see when the credit cards are coming. It saves you some time. You don't have to go through a bunch of mailboxes. Just go right to the ones with the credit cards. Fraudsters were also observed on criminal forums discussing using informed delivery to surveil potential identity theft victims. So I immediately, as soon as I read this article, signed up for it. As myself.
Yes, as you.
As me. But it's just one more thing to be aware of. So you guys knew about this.
Yeah, because UPS and FedEx have their versions. And then I got an email, I think, from the Postal Service, not the band, but the actual agency. And they had that available. And I was like, oh, absolutely. Because right before I had moved in, we had someone come through and like steal a neighbor's birthday card out of their mailbox. And so I immediately became kind of, suspicious. Oh, dear, if that mail thief comes back, I want to know what mail actually showed up and what doesn't. And there's a link in the email where you can say, hey, I didn't receive this piece of mail. And then they can sort of help you try and figure out what happened to it. So it's really handy. But yeah, if someone else is signing up as you, that's not good.
That's not so handy. And we were all worried after the FCC withdrew its net neutrality regulation that maybe telecom carriers would do something to throttle competitors, charge them extra. They wouldn't do that. Ajit Pai said they wouldn't do that. Nobody's going to do that. Why would they want to do that? Oh, wait a minute. Maybe they would. Sprint is throttling Skype, according to a study.
Mm-hmm. Well, their whole network is throttled.
Oh, okay. Well, that's all right.
It's slow.
It's all so slow. Throttling. So it's kind of complicated. 100,000 consumers used a program, an app to test internet connections, the WeHe smartphone app.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. And according to the results, Sprint, the only one throttling Skype at the moment, 34% of Skype calls were throttled, slowed down. In the case of a video call, the video quality would be much poorer than what the network supports. In other words, the network could do it better, but doesn't. Sprint spokesperson said the telecom company doesn't single out Skype or any individual content provider in this way. We just suck in general.
Yeah.
I think that's rough.
And the researchers couldn't recreate the problem.
They couldn't recreate it.
Yeah.
They're thinking maybe because it affects only certain subscription plans. They're not the one they bought. Yeah, I'm glad they're really putting the effort into this. We only bought one. Weehee, by the way, was rejected from the App Store initially in December, and then Apple, after the outcry, approved and published the app. But that helped because, as a result, tens of thousands of new testers. The work is funded by the National Science Foundation, Alphabet, and the French telecom regulator. So we'll see. I'm glad they're doing this, and I hope to see more. And if somebody is throttling, I want to know about it.
Mm-hmm. So we can throttle them.
Yes.
On the good side of Sprint, they just announced that they're raising their cap on tethering to 50 gigs.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So just to balance nice. Some positivity. Yeah. I don't
blame Sprint because they made a bad bet on WiMAX years ago, and that really ended up hurting their network overall. Now that they're – is the merger with T-Mobile going to go ahead?
Who knows? I so hope so. They really need it. And yeah.
I'm a T-Mobile customer, and
T-Mobile ads have really been hammering hard on the patriotism of T-Mobile and how they're an upstanding American citizen.
Oh, that worries me.
It basically, please approve this, please.
Yeah. Yeah. Please, we love America.
Yeah, there's been a whole lot. We love the veterans. Without us, veterans can't talk to their parents.
That's a good point.
Oh boy.
No, there's been a lot of ads where it's T-Mobile. We're the backbone of this country.
Please let us merge with Sprint. Yeah. I know it's a Japanese company, but
yeah, no, there's the advertising blitz has been impressive.
Hmm. I have been hard on Ajit Pai, but I'm going to give him some credit because he has stepped forward and said, Sprint. And a few other U.S. telecoms have to do better fighting robocalls. And by the end of next year, he wants to implement a scheme, believe it or not, called Shaken and Stirred.
Detail.
This is not a martini. It's just very interesting acronyms for essentially a certificate program.
Of course.
So that
they love their acronyms.
They love the acronyms. Yeah. So the idea is that outgoing call would get authenticated, would get it's basically private public key crypto, would get the shake and stir framework, would validate handoff of calls because the outbound telecom would give it an authentication saying, yes, it's from our network, it's this person. And then the incoming call could verify that it was from the person making it. And the theory being, well, you know, spammers, robocallers aren't going to use real authentication. The problem with Shaken and Stirred, Sprint says it's very expensive for us to implement, and it won't work because until every telecom in the world uses it, no one's going to turn on Shaken and Stir because it'll reject international calls and things like that, right? Because not that these are bad callers, but because they're not authenticated because they're not using Shaken and Stir.
Mm.
Obviously, some
and there's some IP telecoms that are genuine, but like have you heard of Magic Jack?
Right.
They're not going to use all
it.
These.
Yeah,
they're not going to use that. It's not going to be worth it.
And guys are probably using VoIP for these calls. I mean, that's why there's so many of them. Mm-hmm. So it's a.
You mean not everybody gets their robocalls from Crockett, California? I'm the only one lucky enough to get those every day.
Right, from your locale, right? Your area code. Mm-hmm. I get calls from mine my area code all the time.
Area code and the number is similar to my own number.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break. We can wrap things up. Our show today brought to you by FreshBooks. I was just talking to somebody, a fan, yesterday. He's a bodyguard. He's a bodyguard for like famous people like the Kardashians. Oh. And he says, but whenever you talk about FreshBooks, I go, yeah, it's a pain in the butt to do invoices. When you're a freelancer and you have to send out invoices, it's a pain. But if you don't send out invoices, you don't get paid. FreshBooks changed my life. And he was telling me it changed his. He uses it.
Cool.
The beauty of FreshBooks makes it easy to create professional-looking, beautiful invoices that have on them a Pay Me button. As a FreshBooks customer, you are able to take online payments. You don't have to do anything extra. And it turns out your customers want to pay you. They just, it's a pain in the butt for them to pay bills, just like it is for you to send bills. So when it's easy for them to pay them, just pay me right now. I'm looking at the invoice. You get paid, on average, twice as fast. And then here's the other thing. Because you're using it to send invoices, to record received invoices, to keep track of expenses, he said he loves that. You can take pictures of the expense receipts with your phone. Goes right into the invoices. And all of that together is accounts receivable, accounts payable, expenses. You're doing full industry standard accounting. FreshBooks puts it all together and gives you all the reports like general ledger and trial balance that your accountant could ever want. When tax time comes, you're ready, baby. FreshBooks is amazing. It makes it so easy to keep track of. For instance, as a freelancer, I never knew if I made money. You know, it was only at tax time when I said, well, all the expenses and then what I made, and yeah, I made money, or no, I didn't make money. With FreshBooks, you always know. You can do so much more, too. It's a web app, so that means they're always adding features like proposals. Now you can create proposals with rich text content and images. You can accept clients' e-signatures as acceptance, legally binding. You can send invoices, estimates, and proposals in multiple languages, multiple currencies. FreshBooks will even automatically connect to your bank account and update expenses every day, so you have a continual, up-to-date information about how you're doing. It with the mobile app, you can keep tabs on your business no matter what you're doing, where you are. Easily search for uncategorized expenses in your FreshBooks account. Find them, categorize them. Save time and automate more of your workflow with more than 70 apps and integrations that FreshBooks offers, including Everlance. I don't know if you use Everlance. It lets you maximize deductions and automatically capture every work mile. Flows right into FreshBooks. Bulk actions, marking sent, paid, download as PDF, that kind of thing. Just, I can go on and on. End the year on a high note. Hit the ground running in 2019. Get FreshBooks. You could try it free right now for 30 days at FreshBooks.com/twit. Join the 24 million people who've used FreshBooks to painlessly send invoices, track time, capture expenses. Oh, yeah, because he's a bodyguard. He tracks the time. He says it's really easy. I have the app. When I go on duty, I press a button. When I go off duty, I press a button. Go to FreshBooks.com/twit. Try it free for 30 days and enter This Week in Tech in the How Did You Hear About Us section. FreshBooks.com/twit. We had fun this week. I think, do we have a mini movie illustrating the fine week that we just went through on Twit? Let's watch it.
Previously on Twit.
I see the UPS man has arrived.
Oh, my God. What happened? There's Santa. A giant pile of boxes in front of me. These all seem to be from a company named AI. So go ahead, Paul. What were you saying?
Tech News Weekly.
We talked to Adrian Westaway from a company called Special Projects about a magical new UI for the phone.
The idea really simply is that when you're kind of working with pen and paper or physical kind of things, you would lay them out on your desk in front of you. And just to move from one thing to another, you wouldn't even think about it. The invention allows you to kind of assign apps to certain spaces, and by moving the device to those different spaces, wow, it will bring those apps into focus.
The new screensavers.
Australian intelligence says Huawei was used in espionage in Australia.
The biggest part of this story is that there's this general discomfort. This becomes a part of that conversation, which is, how can we trust your hardware?
Every single Apple product we're going to show is built
assembled in China. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
My favorite Windows laptop is a Lenovo.
Right.
It's made in China. It's a Chinese company.
Absolutely.
I just don't know what to think. Well, we give you the news. We don't know what to think.
That's right.
That's our job.
Twit.
We read things.
You decide.
You think.
Tech just like you like it.
Hot, fresh, and shiny. Thank you, everybody, for being here today. Lisa Schmeiser, it's always a pleasure. You're great to have here.
Oh, thank you.
Editor, you should bring Girl Scout cookies next time, though, if you don't mind.
So invite me in Q1 of,
is that when
2019.
It is?
Yeah, okay. I actually have to order the cookies for my troop in December. Kickoff is at the end of January. We'll be selling through the beginning of March.
Karsten, make a note of that, will you?
Get that down.
Girl Scout cookies. You'll find
your orders now.
Yeah, please. You'll find Lisa at IT Pro today. She's editor there and on the Twitter at L Schmeiser, S-C-H-M-E-I-S-E-R. Thank you, Lisa. It's great to have you. Micah Sargent, always a pleasure. He's
enjoy it.
Every time I hear Chihuahua Coffee, I feel like it must be a hopped up little doggy. Chihuahua.
Can you imagine a Chihuahua drinking coffee?
Don't feed coffee to your Chihuahuas, folks.
No.
They're bad enough as they are. Do you have Chihuahuas?
I have two Chihuahuas, yeah. Oh. And I don't give them coffee. And they are not bad enough as it is. I heard that.
No, they're cute. They're cute Chihuahuas. Chihuahua.coffee, Micah Sargent. He's on Twitter at M-I-K-A-H-S-A-R-G-E-N-T. And all the way from the People's Republic of Austin, Texas, Wesley Faulkner. Was it a good campaign, a good election day for you?
2016, no, it was horrible on multiple fronts.
Yeah, Stacey was kind of bummed too.
Yeah, I'm not just talking about my race.
But
what I do want people to vote on is that we, IBM, I guess now I'm speaking for IBM.
Wesley does not speak for IBM unless he does.
The project I'm currently working on is for IBM systems of getting more reviews for our hardware products. So I know there are a lot of IT professionals who watch this program. If you could do me a personal favor, go to G2 Crowd or Trust Radius and just put in a review or a rating. I would highly appreciate it. If you need links to those, just hit up my Twitter link, and it would do me a world of good if I can get at least one review on either of those sites for any IBM systems that you currently own.
Any IBM systems.
If you're on the mainframe, which is Z Linux 1, if you're on storage, especially if you have flash storage, if our flash systems, we're looking for more reviews. And if you have any of our servers, which is Power9 specifically.
Are you having fun? It was a relatively new job last time we talked. You settled in?
It's black. Nice. Yeah. Settled in? No, never settle. I'll never be comfortable. There's so much to learn. There's so many people to learn from, too. I don't know if you know how large IBM is, but we have over 380,000 employees and plus just a Red Hat. And so I have a lot of friends who work for Red Hat, and so getting reacquainted. So things are complicated. Things will always change, and I will always change with them.
I love Red Hat. I always loved Red Hat. So it's going to be very interesting to watch what happens there. Wesley Faulkner is developer relations advocate at IBM. He's Wesley83 on Twitter. Thanks for joining us, all three of you. It was a lot of fun. There was a lot of food for thought. My brain expanded a lot today. Thank you. I appreciate it. I hope yours did too. We do Twit every Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC. Tune in live if you want. YouTube is not one of our streaming services, but there's a long story there. Is there an update on that? We got a strike from covering the Apple event, and they pulled us down, and some slimy lawyer from Apple sent us an email, but we've contested it.
There will be more news towards the end of this coming week.
Okay. Meanwhile, we have plenty of other very nice providers like Twitch and Mixer and Ustream who you can watch. You can see audio and video. We have audio at Spreaker as well at twit.tv/live. That's where you should go. Pick the stream that works for you. If you're watching or listening live, do join us in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. That's a great place to kind of join the community and participate. It's a lot of fun in the chat room as they're watching at the same time as you are. Now, of course, I know you got a busy life, so if you can't watch live and chat live, you can always get on-demand versions of everything we do at our website, twit.tv. The best way to participate, though, is subscribe. That way you'll get a copy of every episode the minute it's available later in the day on Sunday, right after we do it. And you'll always have it sitting on your phone. You can even listen on your smart assistant. Ask your Echo or your Siri or your Google Assistant. You just say, listen to Twit Live if you want to listen to the live stream or listen to This Week in Tech. And almost every case, it'll play the most recent version of any of our shows. Thank you.
We'll also record if you're going to get murdered.
If you're getting murdered, shout Echo, I'm dying. And hope the police have the brains to subpoena it.
I don't think you'd be dying. You'd have to say, Echo, I'm being killed.
Bye.
Echo, so-and-so is killing me.
Schmeiser is killing me. Always start with the name of the murderer.
There you go.
Because they always say, my murderer was.
Start with the name.
Schmeiser was my murderer. Always start with the name, right?
I feel like this is when having a hard to pronounce last name actually works in my favor because
Schumgetty.
Because like Schmeiser, and I'll be like, that wasn't me.
Schmeiser,
no, they didn't pronounce the name correctly. It couldn't have been me.
It couldn't have been me. The signatures don't match.
Exactly.
Yeah. Schmeiser is my. See, that wouldn't work either.
Yeah.
Schmeiser, murderer. That would work. Yeah, okay, awesome. So you get timing's everything. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Another twit is in the can. Bixby, I'm dying here. Doing the twit.